back at home.
Five victims of the grooming gang scandal in Rotherham say they were also abused by police officers. I'm LBC's Alex Taylor-Brown with the details.
Plus, on the run, far-right campaigner Toby Robinson allegedly fleeing the country after punching a man to a ground at a railway station. We'll give you a full report on that. Plus, the plan for first-time buyers to benefit from tens of thousands of new homes on brownfield railway land, and a businessman and his rugby player son stabbed to death at a family firm in London. Lawless London, yet again. Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, a massive earthquake, one of the strongest ever recorded, has triggered tsunami warnings across the Pacific. The 8.8 magnitude tremor struck off the Kamchatka Peninsula in eastern Russia early this morning. Parts of the US, Japan and some Pacific islands are covered by evacuation orders. LBC's Laura Westbrook says workers at Japan's Fukushima nuclear plant have been told to leave the site.
This is obviously something that is being watched very closely because of what happened in 2011 when a nuclear meltdown happened after an earthquake and tsunami. Since then, there have been many precautionary measures that have been put in place, but this is a crucial area to keep safe because of the nuclear debris at the bottom of these power plants.
Israel's Prime Minister has condemned Britain's plan to follow France in recognising a Palestinian state. Sir Keir Starmer has promised to take the step in September unless Israel takes substantive action to end the crisis in Gaza. He's again told Hamas to disarm and release the remaining hostages. Jeffrey Epstein's brother has branded President Trump a liar for playing down his relationship with the late paedophile financier. Mr. Trump is under growing pressure over reports his name appears in files related to Epstein, documents he'd previously promised to release. The White House says that is fake news. Mark Epstein, who's been speaking to our sister station, LBC News, says it's the mark of a desperate person.
I understand a lot of people distancing himself from Jeffrey. He was charged, you know, with crimes that people don't want to be associated with. And I understand that, you know, but the lies, you know, that's a little bit much, especially when they're so provable that they're lies. It's becomes laughable.
A five-day walkout by resident doctors in England has just come to an end. Ministers have insisted they won't meet the BMA's pay demands, but both sides have indicated they're prepared to hold talks. People in Birmingham will have a chance to pay their final respects to Ozzy Osbourne later. There will be a funeral procession through his home city this afternoon before a private ceremony. The Black Sabbath frontman died last week at the age of 76. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 91.36 after closing up 54 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells. Eastern parts of England and Scotland could see some showers later. A high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me.
You've got it. Mm. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Societies Rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/UK.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, you're 3 minutes after 7 on Wednesday, July the 30th. A reward for Hamas or the right thing to do? The decision outlined yesterday by Sir Keir Starmer here in the UK and David Lammy, the Foreign Secretary. We'll give you the background to that and, of course, then, as ever, ask for your view. As you've already heard on the news bulletin, tsunami warnings across much of the Pacific region. Here's how one network in the United States, NBC, broke the news.
The National Weather Service has just issued a tsunami warning for all of Hawaii, parts of Alaska, and a tsunami watch for the entire West Coast.
Back in the UK, the Asian grooming gang victims in Rotherham reportedly raped by the police, who then threatened to hand them back to abusers. A shocking development in that truly shocking case. Events yesterday, Technology Secretary Peter Kyle accusing Nigel Farage of being on the side of Jimmy Savile regarding the Online Safety Act.
Make no mistake about it, if people like Jimmy Savile were alive today, he'd be perpetrating his crimes online. And Nigel Farage is saying that he's on their side.
I've read closely into this. More than one newspaper is saying that that attack line was cleared by Number 10 prior to Mr. Kyle. He wasn't, quote, freelancing it. Is that the sort of language that we need? Lawless London, lawless Britain. A property developer and his son fatally stabbed in London. President Trump talked to the London mayor, Sir Sadiq Khan, earlier this week when he, the president, was in Scotland.
I'm not a fan of your mayor.
Why not?
I think he's done a terrible job, the mayor of London, but a nasty person.
And dear Lord, we need to lift the mood. So we are coming to the end of the celebrations, but we will look at events in central London yesterday.
I've been crying all the way down the mile. This is unbelievable. It's probably one of the best things we've ever been a part of. So thank you for coming out.
A truly rawsome reception for our lionesses.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Just before you pay you what are called some clips or bits of audio of the relevant people speaking, here's a thought. Anything that can be done, within reason, to stop the suffering in Gaza is a positive. And I don't doubt for a moment the Prime Minister, and indeed the Foreign Secretary's, wishes to do that. I'm not doubting that for a second. But if it is so crucial, why would you allow another 41 days of children starving, the denial of medical aid, whatever else it might be, another 41 days before, if this is seen as such a significant act, the recognition by the United Kingdom of Palestine as a state, you'd allow another 41 days? Because that's when this meeting that you'll hear referred to by the PM in September takes place. And in all honesty, do you really think in Jerusalem they're going to be thinking, right, the UK's taken this stance? Take your views in that in a moment. Let's give you the background. Of course, it was yesterday's emergency cabinet meeting. Pretty rare. Normally it's events such as Britain going into a war or major crises. And after it, Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer staged a Downing Street press conference.
I've always said that we will recognise a Palestinian state as a contribution to a proper peace process at the moment of maximum impact for the two-state solution. With that solution now under threat, this is the moment to act. So today, as part of this process towards peace, I can confirm the UK will recognise the state of Palestine by the United Nations General Assembly in September unless the Israeli government takes substantive steps to end the appalling situation in Gaza, agree to a ceasefire, and commit to a long-term sustainable peace, reviving the prospect of a two-state solution.
We'll spell out what those substantive steps are. The voice really used by Prime Ministers is effectively if they're declaring war. It's of obviously great importance to him, but in reality, what difference will it make? I say again, if it brings about peace, sensational. Fantastic. The message was reiterated the other side of the Atlantic by Foreign Secretary David Lammy at a UN summit.
And so it is with the hand of history on our shoulders that His Majesty's government therefore intends to recognise the state of Palestine when the UN General Assembly gathers in September here in New York.
Well, there's no shortage of hyperbole, is there? Now the hand of history again. United Kingdom, we perhaps overrating ourselves? Criticism, of course, soon began. Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, posting on social media that Sir Keir's move rewards Hamas, monstrous terrorism, and punishes its victims. Leader of the Conservative Party, Kemi Badenoch, also attacked the move. Speaking to my LBC colleague Ian Dale last night, she said Sir Keir is trying to appear like a world statesman, but is on the back foot.
We've got a humanitarian crisis. There is a war on. Statehood doesn't solve any problems. Macron already made this announcement. So we've got Keir Starmer running after him, trying to show that he's also in this space. Donald Trump has put out a statement saying that this was not something they discussed, which is slightly different from the way Downing Street presented it. So I think that this is a prime minister trying to look like a world statesman, but still appearing to be somebody who's on the back foot.
Let's get into some comment to inform your views and, of course, take your voices on the radio. Turn first to Sir Michael Ellis, former Conservative MP, served as Attorney General not that long ago, joins me now. Sir Michael, you'll be aware that under the Montevideo Convention of 1933, a state requires a permanent population, a government, defined borders, and the capacity to conduct foreign relations. Does Palestine tick the list? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Definitely not. Frankly, this is a ludicrous move by Starmer, and it's ludicrous because for two main reasons. Legally, it isn't applicable, but secondly, it isn't going to work for reasons that you've just adumbrated. The fact of the matter is the Palestinian entity does not come close to meeting the legal requirements under the Montevideo Convention for the recognition of a state. One of those criteria is that it has to have recognised borders. Another is that it has to have a functioning government. So on at least two of the four criteria, it doesn't meet it. But in a sense, that's a legalism. What really matters to people is this sort of stunt going to work? It isn't. He's purported to give Israel in these threatening tones. And this is a man, by the way, who can't even stand up to Mauritius, a country of 200,000 people, when it comes to the Chagos Islands and buckled to them. He's not going to stand up to Israel, and that's proven by the fact that Israel within, never mind 6 weeks, within 6 hours, Israel has rejected the UK's stance outright and out of hand. This is not a position of strength from Keir Starmer, it's a position of weakness.
Sir Michael, I'm sure you want peace in the region as much as I do and as much as the listeners. Surely the way to achieve it is to keep Israel as an ally, to be a questioning ally, to sometimes be a confrontational ally, not to effectively put them completely offside. Sir Michael.
Absolutely right. I mean, the point about this is, where is the pressure on Hamas? You've got a vicious terrorist entity, the like of which is almost unparalleled in the modern era. All the pressure from the UK and from France, for that matter, is applied to Israel. Meanwhile, your partners, if you're the UK government at the moment, are Hamas, who throw gay people off bridges. And these are the people that you're not putting pressure on. You're seeking to put pressure on a democracy. It's a moral bankrupt position. Trump has already said it's rewarding Hamas, and it clearly is seeking to do so.
Grateful for your time, Sir Michael. Thank you. Sir Michael Ellis, you were Conservative MP for Northampton North, and you served as Attorney General 12 after 7. Listening, Bronwyn Maddox, Director and Chief Executive at Chatham House. Important to get your take on this. It would appear, fail to meet the necessary criteria. So is this just performative in your view? Good morning.
Good morning. It is symbolic, and at this point only symbolic, but it also says very clearly to Israel, even your friends, and Britain is one, have reached the limit. This is what is happening in Gaza is absolutely intolerable. But it also says that, in Britain's view, a commitment to a two-state solution, a phrase, which doesn't have much more life in it. Unless there is some reality put behind it. This is the goal of British policy for Israel's sake as well as the Palestinians, and that this should be something that countries work towards in terms of getting a leadership, defining the borders and working on it. It also supports the region in working towards that, and that is a crucial new factor that the region is very prepared to do that.
What would, of course, be interesting is that if Israel, and I appreciate, Bronwyn, it's unlikely, but if Israel does meet all the substantive steps, that suddenly UK completely changes its position. I mean, how would that look globally?
I think Keir Starmer has made a real confusion in this, of confusing a goal that Britain wants of recognising a Palestinian state and working to create that state with doing something to persuade Israel to relieve the immediate crisis in Gaza. And he's confused those two things. He could have done other things about the crisis in Gaza, other forms of pressure. So I think that was a mistake and a confusion.
Grateful for your time. Bronwyn Maddox, Director and Chief Executive at Chatham House, coming up on 14 after 7. Let's get your voices on the radio. Tabitha in Boreham Wood, your reaction to what you've just heard or you watched or heard yesterday. Morning, Tabitha.
Good morning, Nick. Starmer has made himself once again the joke of the planet, actually, because there's only one way to stop the problems happening.
I have to say more than 140 countries actually support recognising Palestine. So,
And tell me, Nick, how's that working for them?
It's not working well. But I say he's a global joke is perhaps a little unfair, Tabitha.
That's my opinion. But you asked, opinion.
He's not alone in doing this, Tabitha.
He's not alone. But again, how's that working for everyone? There's only one way to get peace in Israel and Gaza. Only one way, and that is to remove Hamas, because Hamas is the obstacle to peace. How do you have a two-state solution when we already know what that looks like? The two-state solution, small, if you like, was having Gaza under the control of the Palestinians right beside Israel. And we've had that, and we know what that looks like. And for two decades, it was non-stop terrorism against Israel.
Well, you're right. Where you're absolutely right is one of the criteria, as I've said, is that you have a recognised government. Well, Palestine, the area known as Palestine, probably has two. The Palestinian Authority led by Mahmoud Abbas on the West Bank, and then Hamas in Gaza. So it doesn't fulfil the criteria anyway.
But the other problem is that actually what Starmer's done, I would argue, is not good for Britain, because it's showing British people and everybody else that he's running scared from the hard left of his party.
Do you think that's why he's done it?
I don't think there's much doubt. If you look at previous statements and you look at the sentiments he seemed to be expressing up until very recently, he never was pushing for this. There are reports that Angela Rayner has been pushing for this and that she's the real power in that party. He has done this to keep himself, I think, relevant, and because he knows she wants that and she's pushing for it.
Thanks for getting us started, Tabitha. Strong views, more of those to come. And coming up after the news, a tsunami warning for the Pacific region. Mayor of Honolulu in Hawaii, Rick Blangiardi, said,
"We're here to help you, but we need you to help yourself as well. Don't go down to the beach. Don't be looking at waves. Get yourself as high as you possibly can."
It sounds grim. We'll have more after this. Just turned 7:16. LBC News headlines then. Thomas Watts.
A massive earthquake off eastern Russia has triggered widespread tsunami warnings in the Pacific. Israel's prime minister has accused Britain of rewarding terrorism by moving towards the recognition of a Palestinian state. A five-day strike by resident doctors in England has come to an end. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, some rain in the east, a high of 24 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. There are long queues on the M25 due to an accident clockwise from Junction 5 for Sevenoaks to Junction 6 for Godstone. The M4 is stop-start onto the elevated section eastbound from Junction 3 for Hayes to Junction 2 for Brentford. There are delays on the M11 southbound before Junction 4 for the A406 North Circular Road. In Dagenham, there are the usual delays on the A13 westbound from Raynham to Barking and the Lodge Avenue flyover. Things are slow in southeast London on the A2 westbound between Dance Interchange and Kidbrook Interchange, and there are severe delays on the northern line between Battersea Power Station and Camden Town. That's via Charing Cross and is due to a points problem at Kennington.
LBC.
Hey parents, are you ready for the new term? At Two, we've got you covered for the big school shop. Count on us for A-star quality uniforms at amazing prices. Don't miss out on a pack of two perfect white polos from £3 or a pack of two trousers with reinforced knees for £7. Discover the full range at Sainsbury's and 2.co.uk. Two works every time. Uniform prices from ages 3 to 6, subject to availability, delivery charges may apply.
Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Check your retirement savings are on track with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
19 minutes after 7, Malcolm Muir will be the next caller. No shortage of reaction to the position taken by the United Kingdom yesterday, but it's 41 days away. 41 days more of reportedly children starving to death, lack of medical aid, lack of power, water and everything else. This story is, unsurprisingly, and I would argue quite rightly, the front page of most of your newspapers, the Daily Mirror. Ultimatum, just one word, The Guardian, UK to recognise state of Palestine unless Israel commits to ceasefire. It's the front page of The Telegraph, it's the front page of The Times, it's the front page of The Eye, it's the front page of The Daily Mail. Starmer's quotes reward for Hamas. That is, of course, is the view from Benjamin Netanyahu. To the LBC app, and they're giving you the breaking news, of course, this tsunami warning that we'll be giving you more details on parts of the US, Honolulu, Hawaii, Japan and Philippines. And let's give you one other front page. Oh, this is a nice one. Let's do this. And we are reflecting. We are covering this as well. The Independent. Great picture on the front page. Pride of England. Lionesses join their fans. And there we are. And also there's pictures in all the newspapers. That does lift the mood, wasn't it? A great day of celebration for that team who did so well in the... Well, did so well twice in the Euros, didn't they? They didn't do badly in the World Cup. They're in that final too. Right, let's come back to these events. Malcolm's in Soho. Your reaction, Malcolm, to Palestine, to the Starmer's position on Palestine. Good morning.
Good morning to you. I'd like to ask two questions. Oh. First of all, would he have made that statement if there was British hostages?
I don't know, sir. What do you think?
Probably not.
Okay.
And secondly, if he's going to recognise Palestine as a country, where is he going to build the embassy? Is he going to build it in Qatar, or is he going to build it in Saudi Arabia?
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. It's whether you think it's actually going to happen. I remind you, I won't go through them again, but one of the key matters that you have to display under the Convention of 1933 is a single government. They've got two currently.
No, I agree. But, you know, if he's going to recognise... If he turns around in September and says, we recognise Palestine as a country... whether it's legal or illegal, he's obviously, someone should say to him, okay, so where are you going to build an embassy and how are you going to look after it?
Let's ask you a final question before I move on. Have you lost patience with the way Israel is prosecuting this conflict, conducting itself in this conflict?
I have with some things and not with others.
So how are you to display...
I understand about the situation with the food, but then you see other people, you see other things on the TV or the press or online where there's all this food that the United Nations haven't distributed.
Right. OK. I don't know that that's true, but what we do know is that there have been, obviously, delays. There have been horrific incidents of Israel shooting aid workers... by mistake, not deliberately, but shooting aid workers. How do you display your lack of patience in this?
Well, because everybody is so anti. No one is... Everybody's talking about the food and, you know, it's terrible that what's going on, but nobody's talking about the hostages. You know, these people are still being held and no one... It seems to have been put back on the back burner.
Malcolm, thank you for your input. Andrew in Halifax, your reaction.
Morning, Nick. When I think this government can't sink any lower, it always goes and surprises me.
In what way has it sunk today, in your view, Andrew?
Sir Michael Ellis has already adequately covered the reasons I was already going to mention. So I'll just state that the reason why Starmer has done this is for two reasons. One is to prevent another mutiny on his back benches. And two, it's to further attenuate the hemorrhaging of the lunatic vote to Corbyn's Deform UK.
So this is the new party being started by Jeremy Corbyn and Zara Sultani. Do you think that has influenced Sir Keir's decision quite considerably then, Andrew?
Absolutely. And the sad thing is that the, you know, radical Islam is now so deeply ingrained and embedded in our society, it's now dripping its venom into our parliamentary democracy.
What will the impact be of this in Israel?
Absolutely nothing. And Starmer knows it will be absolutely nothing. And your previous callers have already very well articulated the fact that there are so many barriers to the proper establishment of this. It's performative politics.
That's what a lot of people are saying. Grateful for your input, Andrew. Thank you. Well, as there is a political storm brewing over that decision, there is a real storm brewing in the Pacific. Japan, the US issuing tsunami warnings after a magnitude of 8.8 quake off Russia. Warnings here from lifeguards in Hawaii.
The beaches are closing. Lifeguards are leaving at 5 p.m. Police are evacuating all the beaches, and the police will be evacuating at 6 p.m. We highly recommend you guys leave the beach.
Let's turn to Laura Westbrook, who's reporting for LBC in East Asia and joins me now. OK, what's the timeline over the next 6, 10, 12 hours, or where's the key moment? Laura, good morning.
Good morning. Well, Japan upgraded its tsunami advisory to a warning, and it's expected to be on alert for the next 24 to even 48 hours. Japan's meteorological agency says that tsunami waves could continue for more than a day after this massive earthquake off the coast of Russia. More than 1.9 million people have been asked to evacuate in Japan. Now, they span hundreds of kilometers along its Pacific coast from Hokkaido in the north all the way down to Wakayama in the south. And we are getting pictures of waves that are arriving in Japan on its east coast. The highest height of up to around 50 centimeters, but there are warnings that they could get even higher. The meteorological agency has warned that tsunami waves could reach up to 3 meters high. And this is because we are expecting to get aftershocks. And so Japan is very much staying on high alert. Its Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba has said there's a task force in place. It's assessing the situation. It said there are no injuries so far, but they have warned that subsequent waves could get bigger. And so residents are very much under these evacuation orders are very much being asked to seek higher ground, stay away from their coasts. I've seen some footage of people sheltering on tops of buildings in Japan's Hokkaido prefecture, for example.
So the eye of the storm then, Laura, is focusing on Japan or Russia or Hawaii or across the entire region?
Across the entire region, I mean, there are these tsunami warnings in Japan, but there are also tsunami advisories in the Philippines and Indonesia, as well as China. In the Philippines, for example, they've said that tsunami waves of less than a meter are expected on Wednesday afternoon in Manila. China's Tsunami Warning Center has said that waves of between 30 centimeters and 1 meter are expected to hit parts of the eastern seaboard. And so, but I think very much the focus is on Japan. It does have a very sophisticated warning system, especially after the 2011 magnitude quake of 9.0 that triggered a tsunami that also affected the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, where there was that nuclear meltdown. So since then, Japan has put warnings in place and put systems in place to make sure that it is warning people. But it is very much staying on high alert because we are expecting aftershocks, because this was a very large earthquake. And so that could impact the waves that come from it.
Laura Westbrook reporting for LBC. 7:27. Coming to you, Jonathan. Let's get some of the reactions, though, on the emails and the social media. This comes from Will. A reward for Hamas, that's simply stupid. That is, of course, the view from Benjamin Netanyahu, by the way. Tony, picking up on a point made by the caller, Andrew, Starmer is simply trying to stop the Labour Party from fracturing. He fears Jeremy Corbyn's new party. And Sarah in Ramsgate, I think Starmer has an overinflated opinion of Britain's importance on the world stage. I really don't think the Israeli government will give a... I'll change that, will give a damn whether we do this or not. Nearly got me. Sarah, thank you for that. Jonathan's in Bushy. Jonathan, what will the reaction be, do you think, in Jerusalem? Tel Aviv, good morning.
I think the Israelis will think, so what? At the end of the day, I agree with what Michael Ellis said. Hamas are being awarded for what they did on October the 7th. I'd like to have heard Satir saying, we'll consider recognising the state of Palestine only after the hostages have been relieved, those living and the remains of those that sadly are no longer with us.
But that means, of course, the starvation continues.
Well, you know what, Nick? Nobody knows for sure what's going on in there.
Nobody in detail, but we've seen enough images of people starving and desperate for food, Jonathan. There's little doubt about that.
Nick, I agree with you on that 100%. However, there are also visions of hundreds of tons of food that hasn't been distributed.
Yep. But have you lost a degree of patience with Israel's actions over these months?
Look, I'm no fan of the Netanyahu government.
So how do you show that, then?
That's a million-dollar question. At the end of the day, what I'd like to see, and I agreed with one of the previous callers, the hostages in it seem to have been forgotten. Sakir didn't mention it, which he did say that, you know, the release of hostages is one of the conditions to recognise the state.
I think your point that perhaps we needed to hear more about the plight of the hostages is valid. It wasn't totally ignored, just to nail that one. Jonathan, thank you for your view. We'll have more on that. Two other stories coming up after the news. A shocking development in a truly shocking case already. Child grooming in Rotherham.
Five victims of the grooming gang scandal in Rotherham say they were also abused by police officers. I'm LBC's Alex Taylor-Brown with the details.
Plus on the run, darling of the far right, Tommy Robinson, reportedly flying out of the country after allegedly punching a man to the ground at a railway station. We'll have a report on that. 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, in LBC The News from Thomas Watts.
One of the most powerful earthquakes ever recorded has triggered tsunami warnings across the Pacific. The 8.8 magnitude tremor struck off the Kamchatka Peninsula in eastern Russia early this morning. Israel's accused the UK of appeasement towards jihadist terrorists by moving to recognise a Palestinian state. Sir Keir Starmer's promised to take the step in September unless Israel takes substantive action to end the crisis in Gaza. Ministers have started a property company to oversee the development of surplus railway land. The Department of Transport says Platform 4 will back the construction of 40,000 homes over the next 10 years. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells. Eastern parts of England and Scotland could see some showers later. A high of 24 degrees.
This is LBC.
Having more energy isn't just about sunrise sprints or pumping iron. It's about being able to live life on full charge every day. That's why Holland & Barrett's Energy Squad is here for you, in store or online, offering personalised expert advice to support your energy levels. Head to a Holland & Barrett store to shop their wide range of products or chat to one of their Energy Squad to find the right support for you.
Calling all little explorers. The hunt for squishmallows is on. Who will your little one find in their Happy Meal? Would they chill out with Cam on the beach or rock on with Hallie? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 25th of August, from 11 a.m, Squishmallows comprise toys only. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. The sun goes on and on and on and on. Book now at nutcatch.com.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, it certainly stirred up a reaction, the decision regarding recognition of Palestine, and we'll come back to that in a moment. 7:32, let's dive into the world of finance and business. Bring you the conversation, Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. And why is there a revolution over Revolut? Good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Revolut is an extraordinary success story. Many of our listeners, I'm sure, will be customers. They've got 40 million customers around the world. 10 million of them are in the UK, and they are in the final stages of trying to formalise their status as a bank. Now, it might come as a surprise to some people that they are not yet fully registered as a bank. They want to get that final hurdle so that they can take customer deposits and savings and start issuing loans. It's a very, very complicated process, and they're in a period, what's called the mobilisation period, where they just have to present so much information to the regulators. They're getting frustrated, and the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, attempted to come to their rescue. Now, she's been on a huge push to get regulators, including the financial and banking regulators, to act on more of a proactive and growth footing, she attempted to broker a meeting between the regulators, the Prudential Regulatory Authority at the Bank of England, and Revolut executives. The meeting was scheduled to go ahead until the governor of the Bank of England, Andrew Bailey, said no. He pulled the meeting. He said, this is not the way we do it. There should not be political interference in the regulatory process. It's a really extraordinary twist. It's not the first time that the Chancellor and the Governor of the Bank of England have been at odds in recent months. The Chancellor is on that big deregulation push. They sat next to each other at the Mansion House speech the other day that I was at. And the Governor of the Bank of England has pushed back on a number of her reforms in quite diplomatic language, as you would expect. But he is the more conservative voice in this debate. He's pushed back on some of her banking reforms. And when it comes to Revolut, he pushed back on the Chancellor's efforts to get them over the line to that full banking process. The banking licence will come, I'm sure, but it is a protracted process and it doesn't look like the Chancellor is going to be able to speed it up.
So lastly on this one, as they say in the United States, what's the next shoe to drop them? What's the next thing we look for likely to happen here, Christian?
Well, Revolut insists that they will get their banking licence, that their mobilisation period, as it's called, is the biggest and most complex one ever undertaken in the UK. The Chancellor, I'm sure, is impatient. Maybe she's a Revolut customer, I don't know. The Governor of the Bank of England is using his good office to perhaps just put the contrarian voice occasionally on some of the Chancellor's more enthusiastic efforts to speed things up.
Let's stay with the Governor of the Bank of England, or the bank at least. There's urgings on another front page, the Daily Express. They need to take fairly decisive action through the rest of the year.
Yes, the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, have issued one of their latest global roundups. The good news is they said that tariffs are not going to be as bad as they first thought. They're still there and they're not good, but they're not as bad as they first thought. So they've upgraded a little bit of their global growth expectations. They warn on fiscal deficits and slowing economic growth in many countries, not least the UK. And they've urged the Bank of England in the UK to cut interest rates twice again this year. Now, that is still probably what most people expect to happen, although given inflation that we've discussed, given the state of the jobs market, there is now some question mark over what used to be a bit of a nailed on odds, a bit of a question mark that the bank will cut once or twice this year. There is pressure from the IMF to cut twice, to try and spur a bit more economic growth, but the bank will be cautious given the state of the economy.
Let's move on to other matters. What's happening with YouTube?
YouTube has become the second most watched media platform in the UK, just behind the BBC. This is Ofcom's latest report that looks at the state of our viewing habits. It is now in order: BBC, YouTube and ITV. The average amount of time spent on watching YouTube is about 50 minutes per household on TV. And of course, the younger you get, the more likely you are to engage in that. All sorts of concerns now for what you might call legacy broadcasters. I think I prefer the phrase heritage broadcasters, about how they can compete, what the commercial future looks like for them. But viewers are spending more and more time watching YouTube and other streamers, and linear TV, particularly scheduled TV, is just slipping down and down people's viewing habits.
And finally, we started by talking about an organisation that wants to be a bank, Revolut. Let's talk about another organisation that is a bank, and a pretty big one, HSBC. What's it telling some of its bosses?
HSBC has told its senior staff, its managing directors, that it now wants them in the office 4 days a week. It says they've got to set the tone. And, of course, we've discussed this plenty of times, Nick. More and more of these large employers, particularly in the city and banks, particularly American-based banks, have said that work from home is effectively over. In contrast, the regulator in the city, the Financial Conduct Authority, is asking its staff to be in the office 2 days a week. And that is met with the threat of strike action from those staff, or many of those staff, who said that they simply won't put up with that demand. So a bit of a two-tier approach to working from home in financial services in particular.
Working from home, working from the office later today. I'm sure Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM, 7:37. Let's have a couple of emails and texts coming in. Glyn says, so Hamas holds on to the hostages until September, then they have the upper hand globally over Israel. Andrew asks, I'm confused. What does Keir Starmer believe in? He seems to say he believes in a Palestinian state if Israel stops hostilities. Does that mean if they do, he doesn't believe in a Palestinian state? Well, that's the point I put to the chief executive of the Chatham House International Organization. So, it is literally like this. I believe in a Palestinian state. Oh, Israel have just decided to let in food and make sure that there's a ceasefire. I don't believe in a Palestinian state. It's a bit like this, you can't be a little bit pregnant. Either you do believe in it or you don't. Kay's in Edgware. Kay, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Good, thank you. Puzzled by this one. Unless it helps bring peace, and then I'm delighted.
Look, so I'm puzzled as well, yeah? But I'm going to start with two statements. Number one, some justice is better than no justice at all. And number two, justice is a prerequisite for peace, right? Yeah. That's why I'm so confused as to how he's framed this. It's basically saying that the conditions are still based around Israel. So unless Israel does something, unless Israel doesn't do something, he will recognize the Palestinian state. And if they do it, what does that actually mean?
What he called the substantive steps is what you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah. But I'm all for a Palestinian state being recognized, mm-hmm. but I just don't like the way that he's framed it, because he's basically playing the real politics game in my eyes.
Well, he is a politician, in fairness to the man. What should he have done, Kay?
What he should do is he should just say outright he's going to recognize Palestine.
If you go by the internationally recognised Montevideo Convention of 1933, it doesn't fulfil two criteria.
I understand that. But at the same time, from what we've been seeing and the way we know to be morally correct, we should be recognising Palestine. And we should get to the details of doing that afterwards.
Well, it's whether it's morally right to recognise a country that is in part ruled by terrorists.
Well, again, that depends on who you ask.
Well, no, sir. No, Hamas is in control of Gaza. Come on,
No, they're not. And if they were to,
Hamas is not in control of Gaza.
Not at this moment in time. No.
Control of Gaza?
Nobody. Israel, to be fair.
No. If Israel was in control of Gaza, they wouldn't keep the shelling, would they?
Come on, mate.
I think everybody accepts Hamas is all right. Allow nominally in control, but that they are controlling. Everything is the statistics are coming from the Hamas health authority. They are the controlling force.
Let's go to the argument of food now. You know, if they really wanted to stop the blockade and they wanted to feed the Palestinian people, do you know it'd be so simple for them to do? If all the allied nations and excluding America, decided to rock up there on RAF boats and French boats and whatnot, and dared the IDF and said, you know, we're going to feed these people. Do you really think the IDF would fight off the UK and the allied nations?
No, I don't. And do you really think they would do that? Than other
well,
nations
I know,
would
I know
do
they
that.
Won't do that. So that no. just shows me that shows me that they're not serious.
Okay. Kay, I enjoyed our conversation. Have yourself a safe day. We come back to matters at home. And as if a story couldn't get any worse, girls exploited by the Asian grooming gangs in Rotherham were also sexually assaulted by corrupt police officers who threatened to hand them back to their abusers if they did not comply, it has been alleged. Here with all the details, LBC's very busy Yorkshire correspondent Alex Taylor-Brown. Alex, morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, yeah, as we know from the findings from the Alexis J report back in 2014, at least 1,400 children were abused in Rotherham between the mid-90s and the early 2010s. Now, a BBC investigation has spoken to a handful of women who, as teenagers, were victims of grooming gangs in the town. They were also abused by police officers. Most of the victims were teenagers, but some were as young as 11. Many were in care. Now, we're going to hear from a couple of the victims, and just a warning to our viewers that they do talk about some of the abuse that they suffered. Emma, which is not her real name, says she was abused by an officer. She says they are the forgotten children.
He knew we wouldn't be missed. He knew we wouldn't be reported. He played on that vulnerability, you know, and that naivety, and the innocence that we still had left. I can't go to a copper. Because they just said they're lying, they're naughty kids, getting them back to them kids' homes. We didn't have a leg to stand on.
One victim said she was attacked in the back of a marked police car with the officer threatening to hand her back to the gangs if she didn't comply. Another victim, Willow, which is also not her real name, told the BBC she was abused by two officers over a three-year period.
I would rather be raped once or give one man oral sex than to be taken somewhere where I know it'd be 15, 20 guys, one after another.
The Assistant Chief Constable for South Yorkshire Police, Hayley Barnett, has said, "We know how hard it must be for a victim or survivor who's been badly let down in the past to put their faith in South Yorkshire Police of today," adding that the victims are at the heart of the investigations. Three former police officers have been arrested on suspicion of historic sexual offences since late 2024. These crimes are alleged to have happened between 1995 and 2005 whilst the officers were on duty. No one has yet been charged. David Greenwood is from Swatowska Solicitors, who are representing a number of women in these grooming gang cases. He says the full truth in terms of the level of corruption in Rotherham is yet to come out.
We've gathered statements from 30 women who allege that they have been either sexually or physically abused by police officers or have been the subject of corruption from them. I don't have confidence that there aren't officers working on the case that know some of these officers against whom allegations are being made and are burying evidence or just not finding evidence deliberately.
The force says a dedicated team of detectives working on this case have worked diligently to explore all lines of inquiry. That investigation is being overseen by the police watchdog, the IOPC. Now, Professor Alexis J has spoken to the BBC on this, saying many, many legitimate causes for victims and survivors at the time to feel that there was a total lack of trust in South Yorkshire Police.
I'm astonished that this is still going on and these young women still have not had any justice. I'm very shocked at the idea that South Yorkshire Police would be investigating themselves. Another force should be asked to carry out the investigation.
I've spoken to many politicians over the last couple of years about the grooming gang scandal in Rotherham, Nick, and they describe it as the canary down the coal mine when it comes to this scandal. I've sat through court cases which are as hard as you can imagine. The town was, it's not that it's a closed situation, but the people had built a picture up of the situation of what they thought had happened in Rotherham. These latest revelations perhaps throw that back into doubt, Nick.
Alex Taylor-Brown reporting. Reaction already coming in on this. Carol says it's bad enough South Yorkshire Police turned a blind eye to the abuse. Worse still, hearing they were involved. We need to put allegedly in there, allegedly involved. John makes a very fair point, which I think was actually in Alex's report. We need to get an outside force to investigate the South Yorkshire force. It's like a dystopian horror show every time you hear anything from that region. Keep them coming on that. We'll come back to our conversation. Recognition. The Palestinians say in 41 days, 41 days more suffering. We'll come back to that conversation. Also talking about the knife crime epidemic in London and rest of the United Kingdom as well. But coming up after the news, how is the government going to unite these two cartoon favourites? Bob the Builder uniting with... Thomas, the tank engine. So how do those two come together? The Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, will explain. 7.46 LBC News headlines then. Thomas Watts.
A massive earthquake has struck off the coast of eastern Russia, triggering tsunami warnings across the Pacific. Israel's Prime Minister has condemned Britain's plan to follow France in recognising a Palestinian state. And a five-day walkout by resident doctors in England has come to an end. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, a high of 24 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. There are queues on the M25 due to an accident clockwise from Junction 5 for Sevenoaks to Junction 6 for Godstone. Also on the M25, things are slow into the roadworks anti-clockwise before Junction 10 for the Wisley Interchange. The M11 is stop-start southbound before Junction 4 for the A406 North Circular Road. In Dagenham, there are delays on the A13 westbound from Raynham to Barking in the Lodge Avenue flyover. In southeast London, the A2 westbound is slow between Danson Interchange and Kidbrook Interchange. There are delays in Kent on the A2 in Gravesend. That's westbound before Bean Interchange coming from Cobham and Strood. And there are severe delays on the northern line between Battersea Power Station and Camden Town via Charing Cross.
This is LBC.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
4. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon.
for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge, helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex, as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Psst, have you heard?
About what?
About Boots Optician's ultimate eye test with OptiMap scan.
Why are you whispering?
I think it's for VIPs. It's an in-depth look into your eye that can detect health conditions that other eye scans might miss.
Why are you still whispering?
I can't seem to stop.
Book an eye test and ask about OptiMap in-store at Boots Opticians, rated the UK's favourite opticians. Selected stores, charges apply. Google review data, May 2024 to May 2025 of national chain opticians only. Contact marketing at boots-opticians.co.uk for details.
At TfL, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Today's the day. The day that Jim feels he can't carry on. Unable to see beyond his problems. His pain unbearable. So thankfully today, he reached out to us. Samaritans. And that could save Jim's life. Leave a gift in your will to Samaritans and support people who are struggling to carry on. Help us save lives today, tomorrow, always. To find out how, search Samaritan's Wills.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10 minutes before 8 now. What was the question I asked you just before those news headlines? How's the government combining those two much-beloved cartoon giants, children's favourites, Thomas the Tank Engine and Bob the Builder? By moving to build houses on railway, disused railway land, and here playing the role of the adept controller, Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander joins me now. Good to have you on, Secretary of State. What's the thinking behind this? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks ever so much for having me on, and what a great introduction to this interview.
Did you like that one, Heidi?
To be described as a combination of Bob the Builder and Thomas the Tank Engine. I'll take compliments wherever I can find them. So, what we're doing today is we're announcing the establishment of a new public corporation called Platform 4, which is going to unlock development on land that is surplus to requirements that the railway owns, and make sure that we're bringing forward high-quality developments of new homes next to train stations, new commercial space, office space, new public space. Because I think in towns and cities across the country, too often our railway stations are surrounded by some pretty shabby sites, some derelict land, and we know that we've got to breathe new life into those communities, enable first-time buyers to get on the housing ladder. We think that by doing this in a more integrated way, we can unlock the delivery of 40,000 new homes over the next decade. So I think it's an exciting project that we're working on and a bit of a no-brainer, really.
Cities that you're targeting include Manchester, Nottingham, Cambridge and Newcastle, and you're joining us, I understand, from Newcastle now. Will the homes be solely for first-time buyers, Secretary of State?
No, they won't be solely for first-time buyers. It will be a mixture of homes, and I think we've got to create thriving mixed communities. So some of the developments will be flats, which obviously if you're a first-time buyer and you're thinking of buying your first home, then sometimes it might be a small flat that you're buying. And when you think about developments next to train stations, if you're building a lot of properties, it makes more sense to build those next to good public transport connections. But we want to create thriving mixed communities. So it's not just about first-time buyers, but it's about making best use of public land land and unlocking the development of new regeneration schemes so that we can get that life back into town centres and cities across the country.
Good luck with it. What's the ambition, Secretary of State? When will the first homeowners be given the keys to the door?
Well, some homeowners have already been given the keys to the door.
So this has been running
on
already?
Railway land. Well, we're doing something slightly different. So previously there were two organisations, an organisation called London and Continental Railways that was a product really of the construction that happened around the high speed links down to the Channel Tunnel. And we're merging those with the property development group in Network Rail. So there have been schemes that have happened on railway land previously, and here in Newcastle where I am today, it was previously an old goods yard, and I'm stood here with some homes going up around me still, but some people have already got the keys, and so I'm going to be chatting to a first-time buyer later today. And that those are the sorts of schemes that we want to replicate across the country, do more of them, get them happening faster. And so you're right, there's places like Manchester, Cambridge, a scheme in Nottingham. I was in Peterborough recently as well. My hometown is Swindon. You know, you've got a lot of car parks next to the railway station where if you built a multi-storey car park in the same way that they've done in, say, Reading, you could then unlock that land for development and actually use it in a much more productive way.
You talk about wanting to replicate it across the country. You and I have talked in the past about the very ambitious target set by the government, 1.5 million new homes. You'll be aware that according to the Home Builders Federation, only 39,170 new homes are given approval in England in the first quarter of this year. And that's the lowest quarterly figure since 2012. Heidi Alexander, we're going backwards on that promise, aren't we?
So there's a lot of different statistics that you can look at if you're looking at the number of approvals given. We're actually, you know, what we're actually seeing is, you know, when it comes to new homes being started, a 37% uplift in the first bit of this year compared to last year. There's obviously more that we can do. And when you're delivering homes, it's always going to be a process. You need to get the scheme designed. You need to get it through planning permission. The construction company needs to get their finance in place. And then you need to get the contracts let to get the buildings coming out of the ground. This government is really ambitious as part of our plan for change to deliver those 1.5 million homes. The delivery is going to ratchet up over this parliament,
but
though.
My goodness, Secretary of State, you need about 300,000 a year. You'll be aware that the figure for the first full year of Labour administration is 186,600. That's 12% of your target in the first year. But you're going to move... You're going to move like the lionesses to hit this.
Well, that's what we're determined to do. I think they've set the example for the country, Nick, to be honest. And so, look, as I said,
How many years have I known? You must be 20 plus years. Can you tell me, hand on heart, you will hit the target?
We're going to move heaven and earth to hit that target.
Wasn't quite the answer, was it, Heidi?
And
can you say,
hand
on heart, we will hit the target?
So what I can hand on heart tell you, Nick, is that we will be on the correct trajectory to get there. We're going to do absolutely everything we can to hit that target of 1.5 million homes in this parliament. We haven't set annualised targets because we know that it takes time and that the effect of the planning reforms that we are making, which the OBR have said is actually going to raise the amount of house building to the highest level in 40 years, that this isn't going to all take effect overnight. It is going to take a bit of time, so that delivery pipeline has to ratchet up over the 5 years of this parliament.
All right. Well, you know, we'll talk again about that. Quick word on other matters, as I have a senior representative of the government. We heard the Prime Minister's stance yesterday as regards recognition of a Palestinian state. The response from the Israeli Prime Minister has been Starmer rewards Hamas's monstrous terrorism and punishes its victims. A jihadist state on Israel's border today will threaten Britain tomorrow. A response, Heidi Alexander.
This is not a reward for Hamas. Hamas is a vile terrorist organisation that has committed appalling atrocities. This is about the Palestinian people. It's about those children that we see in Gaza who are starving to death, and it's about their parents who, when they try and get their hands on the meagre amount of food that is making its way into the country, are actually being shot and killed. We've got to ratchet up pressure on the Israeli government to lift the restrictions to get aid back in to Gaza. We are taking part in airdrops with the Jordanian Air Force to get British funded aid packages dropped in there, but it's a poor substitute for having hundreds of trucks going in. in, and we've got to find a way to achieve this two-state solution. The actions of the Israeli government in the last couple of months have made that prospect look further and further away, and we can't allow that to happen. We've seen Gaza, in effect, parts of Gaza raised to the ground, the effective annexation of the West Bank, and so we think it's right to set out this pathway to recognising the state of Palestine. As a government and as the Labour Party, we always said that we would do that at a time when it could have maximum effect, and I think the horror and the gravity of what we are seeing at the moment in Gaza means that that moment is fast approaching.
But to clarify, if Israel does meet the substantive steps as outlined by the Prime Minister, recognition would be withdrawn for the state of Palestine.
So what we have said is that we will make an assessment in September in advance. Well, we've always said that we would recognise the state of Palestine at the point in time when it would have maximum effect in terms of achieving a two-state solution. Now, the decision for Israel is, does it want to be at the table shaping the enduring peace in the region? If so, it should take the actions that we have outlined. We will make an assessment about what it is right to do at that point in time, but we have been very clear in saying that at the moment the prospect of a two-state solution seems to be vanishing because of the recent actions of the Israeli government. We have to act to protect its viability, and we have to use this moment as a diplomatic lever to get aid back in and to also be working with our international allies on what the plan and the solution is. We need to have that ceasefire, and the bloodshed has to stop.
Final question to other matters. Do you support the language when used to talk of Nigel Farage's opposition to online safety laws to liken him to Jimmy Savile? Do you support that? Would you use that language?
So I think the point that the Technology Secretary, Peter Kyle, was making when he was being interviewed yesterday is that it is the stated party position of Nigel Reform and the Reform Party to repeal the Online Safety Act. Did I say something different?
You said
Nick?
Nigel
Sorry.
Reform.
Sorry, I meant Nigel Farage,
I mean,
and the Reform Party.
Essentially, Heidi, it's about the truth, because he does appear to be the party. But do go on. But the question is, would you use that language, Heidi Alexander?
So I think the point that Peter was making...
No, would you use that language, Heidi, if I may call you, having known you for 20 years?
So I think that online predators, like Jimmy Savile, if social media had been around in the day that Jimmy Savile was committing those horrific crimes against children and young people, it is inconceivable that he wouldn't have been on his phone, on his laptop, trying to groom youngsters online.
But is it right to use Nigel Farage in that context, Heidi? Third time of asking.
Nigel Farage is the leader of the Reform Party, and it is his stated position and his party's stated position to repeal the Online Safety Act in its entirety. So a logical conclusion of what he is saying at the moment is that he is happy for, you know, this type of content to be online, and for, you know, he wants to get rid of all of those offences that have been created in the Online Safety Act. Because he said that he wants to get rid of the Online Safety Act, and that is a consequence of getting rid of the Online Safety Act. The people who have been convicted, the people who have been convicted of, you know, cyber flashing, which is a offence committed, an offence created by the Online Safety Act. And let's be clear, there have been individuals that have been convicted of cyber flashing in recent months as a result of that Online Safety Act. But if you get, you know, this is people sharing indecent images with 15-year-old girls. If Nigel Farage wants to... But he is saying that he wants to get rid of the Online Safety Act, which would mean that those sorts of...
But that doesn't mean he's campaigning those to make sorts this of offences,
those sorts of offences would then disappear. So it's on him to set out what he would do to protect children online. And at the moment, all of the evidence is that the Reform Party are not making this a priority, and they want to actually go backwards when it comes to online protections for children, when this Labour government is determined to deliver and clean up the internet.
We need to move on. You're delivering on the promise to build houses. Thank you for your time. 40,000 new homes on what's called brownfield railway land in sites such as Cambridge, Nottingham, Manchester and Newcastle. Heidi Alexander, thank you for your time. 2 minutes after 8, LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, large parts of the Pacific region are covered by tsunami warnings after a huge earthquake off eastern Russia. Nearly 2 million people in Japan have been told to move, with similar alerts in place in parts of the US. The tremor hit Russia's Kamchatka Peninsula early this morning. Captain Nick Wurst from the US Coast Guard is overseeing the response in Hawaii's capital, Honolulu.
We have closed all commercial harbors and have ordered evacuation of those harbors to mitigate risk. In addition, have Coast Guard assets deployed. That's small boats, ships, and planes and aircraft pre-deployed. So post-impact, we are ready to respond very quickly to any search and rescue cases.
Israel's Prime Minister has accused the UK of rewarding terrorism by moving towards the recognition of a Palestinian state. Keir Starmer says he will take the step in September unless Israel agrees to end the crisis in Gaza. He's again called for Hamas to disarm and release all remaining hostages. The Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, has rejected Benjamin Netanyahu's condemnation of the move.
This is not a reward for Hamas. Hamas is a vile terrorist organisation that has committed appalling atrocities. This is about the Palestinian people. It's about those children that we see in Gaza who are starving to death, and it's about their parents who, when they try and get their hands on the meagre amount of food that is making its way into the country.
Ministers are setting up a property company tasked with building more homes on surplus railway land. It's hoped Platform 4 will oversee the construction of 40,000 properties in England and Wales over the next decade. The government has promised to build 1.5 million homes in England by 2029. Jeffrey Epstein's brother has accused President Trump of lying by playing down his relationship with the late paedophile. Mr. Trump is facing growing pressure over reports his name appears in files related to Epstein, documents he previously promised to release. The White House says that is fake news. Mark Epstein, who's been speaking to our sister station, LBC News, says the pair once had a close relationship.
Why is he not releasing the files? What's he afraid of? What's he hiding? Why is he lying about being Jeffrey's office? Why is he lying about, you know, being Jeffrey's friend or not being Jeffrey's friend? You know, it's just, there's many, many witnesses are testifying that they were best of friends.
And a five-day strike by resident doctors in England has come to an end. Both ministers and the BMA say they are prepared to continue discussions, but the government says it won't go any further on pay. In the city, the FTSE 100's reopening at 91.36 after closing up 54 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells. Eastern parts of England and Scotland will see some showers later, a high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. And 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode. Your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions, min spend £60 and charges apply. Max saving £20, new customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 6 minutes after 8, Wednesday, July the 30th. The report that says knife offences in London have increased by 86% in 10 years, and the story of a businessman and his rugby-playing son fatally stabbed at the family firm near Bermondsey. And bear in mind, knife crime in a city like Birmingham is even worse. This is not just a London story. It's a glimpse into what the future could hold for the whole of the country, and we'll look at that in more detail. Let's come back to that row that's brewing over the government and their choice of language concerning Nigel Farage's opposition to the online safety law. You'll have heard Peter Kyle liken him in a sense to Jimmy Savile. A response from Mr. Farage?
This is so absolutely disgusting that it's almost beyond belief. Just how low can a Labour government sink in its desperation?
Nigel Farage will be on this show tomorrow to take your calls. I'll give you that notice now. To other stories.
Police want to question far-right activist Tommy Robinson after an alleged assault at St Pancras railway station as they confirm the suspect has left the country. I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the latest.
Of course, we come back to that story, the UK government saying it would recognise the Palestinian state unless Israel meets substantive steps. We'll take your views, and also we'll hear from the Shadow Foreign Secretary, Dame Priti Patel. And as I said in the previous hour, goodness knows we need to lift the mood. So here's one of those rawsome moments from yesterday. Not normally known for displaying her emotions, the fantastic, peerless England manager, Dame Shirley. Serena Wiegmann, surprised by her favourite singer, Burna Boy, on stage yesterday. They then sang and danced together. We have a full report later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Acutely aware as I am that... and apologies, by the way. I meant to say that at the end of my conversation with the Transport Secretary. If you want to talk about the recognition of Palestine, I appreciate we had a long conversation. We are going to make more time for that. So I'm sorry if we didn't get to you. Sincere apologies. And it's not because we're trying to not allow you to have your say. The exact opposite. We've just reworked the show so we can come back to this in the next hour. So please, again, apologies I couldn't get to you. But they are important matters, of course, concerning housing and other issues. Now, acutely aware as I am that this story mostly reflects on London, it's worth telling you that in Birmingham, per capita, actual knife crime is worse than it is in London. And as often happens in this country, not always, often what happens in a city the size of London is mirrored across the rest of the country. So when I tell you that knife offences here, because I live and work in London, have increased by 86% in a decade, this is research from an organisation from whom you'll hear in a moment. Of course, this does, in a way, track back to views aired in Scotland, in Ayrshire, by President Donald Trump, speaking of the London mayor, Sir Sadiq Khan.
Well, I'm not a fan of your mayor.
Why not?
I think he's done a terrible job, the mayor of London, but a nasty person.
He's a friend of mine.
No, I think he's done a terrible job, but I would certainly visit London.
Do you know, and honestly, this isn't being sort of tabloid journalism here, I can't recall a week now where we haven't covered a stabbing, normally fatal, sometimes serious. The figures we're going to discuss show nationwide an increase of knife offences by 78%. I told you this wasn't a London-only story. In London, 86%. And this comes just a couple of days after a property developer and his son were fatally stabbed at the family-run firm. Terry McMillan, who was 58, and his son Brendan, who was 27, were the victims of a fatal stabbing, a quadruple stabbing, near London Bridge on Monday afternoon. A man in his 30s is recovering in hospital, as is the 31-year-old suspect under police guard. How many weeks ago was it we were talking about a man who was fatally stabbed for his Rolex watch? It wasn't that long ago, was it? And I'm pretty certain we had a double stabbing earlier this week, which we just didn't have time to get to. This is appalling, isn't it? What is being done? Now, I mentioned the organisation that's compiled this figures. It's the Policy Exchange. David Spencer is former DCI Detective Chief Inspector in the Met. He's Head of Crime and Justice at the Exchange, and he wrote this report and joins me now. Good to have you on. Good to talk to you again, Mr Spencer. We know the problem and the scale of it. What needs to be done? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, there's a couple of things to add just to the points that you've made. So within those knife crime offences that you've talked about, the sort of 16, nearly 17,000 in London last year, which are the highest since modern records began, over 60% of them are robberies, and a substantial number of them are robberies where people are trying to steal a mobile phone. The other thing we know about knife crime is that it's highly geographically concentrated. So actually, most of London, there's very little knife crime. And that's great Swathe as a capital. But where there is knife crime, it's very highly concentrated. So we talk about one particular place around Oxford Circus, where there's a very large number of knife crime incidents every single year. And that's been the case year on year. So
Why is that? Is that because people are there with money and they're targets? Why is that area targeted, would you say?
I think it's a number of reasons. Obviously, there's a lot of people there. It is very concentrated. There's a lot of people shopping, tourists, people that may not know the area very well. And therefore, there's probably a sense among the criminal fraternity that people are easy pickings in that sort of location. But the reality of the geographical concentration means that there are options for the police to be able to tackle these problems. So two of the things that we talk about in the report, alongside sort of a heavy police presence, is using stop and search effectively and using live facial recognition. And in all credit to the Metropolitan Police, they've led the way with facial recognition over the last few years. And they, their own data shows that they've arrested over 1,000 suspects, including for sex offences and robbery and all sorts of things, as a result of facial recognition. So what we're saying is that in these places where crime is particularly serious, crime is particularly geographically concentrated, like around Oxford Circus, the police need to be doing more stop and search and use of live facial recognition.
Let's talk through this. You're a DCI in the Met. Stop and search can be rather an inflammatory tactic. Intelligence-led stop and search, random stop and search. How would it work in practice, Mr. Sullivan?
The first thing to say is that it has to be done in a professional way. And I spent some time a couple of years ago on a summer afternoon with officers from the Territorial Support Group working actually around Oxford Circus and Oxford Street. And every single one of those officers was highly professional in how they dealt with the public. So that's the first thing to say.
Why does it cause such angst then, David?
Well, I think the reality is that it is a very intrusive tactic. You know, it is... There is an inherent confrontation in stop and search. Stopping someone, having a conversation with them, looking to look into their pockets, these sorts of things. There is a confrontation. It's very, very uncomfortable. So I do understand why people are concerned about it. But we have to deal with the reality of crime. And you've set it out really well at the beginning of this piece in terms of the volume, the severity of these crimes. And we know from the academic research, so a guy called Lawrence Sherman, who's probably one of the preeminent criminologists in the world at the moment, has done a detailed statistic analysis which shows that increased stop and search leads to fewer knife crime offences and fewer homicides. You know, that's not just the Policy Exchange saying that. That is academic Cambridge University research that's saying that. So I think we need to listen to that sort of evidence.
Why is it in the minds of these people that life has become so cheap, Mr. Spencer?
I mean, I'm not sure I'm the person that can provide an insight to people.
But it has, hasn't it? But, I mean, in my day, you're considerably younger than I, but in my day, you'd probably get a smack on the nose or something like that if you didn't give you what. Now, you're as likely to get stabbed as anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. And one of the things that I found really shocking when I went out with police officers in Oxford Circus a couple of years ago was that they stopped a couple of teenagers, and they were teenagers, we're talking about sort of 14, 15-year-olds, and they were carrying in their rucksacks enormous machetes. I was genuinely shocked. I was a police officer for a long time.
I know you were, yeah.
You know, I dealt with many people sort of carrying kitchen knives and these sorts of things, but, you know, times have moved on, and they are carrying enormous machetes. It is absolutely terrifying.
So, lastly, David, prime ministers, plural, mayors, plural, cities such as London, Greater Manchester, Birmingham, are they doing enough?
Well, I think, and we set out this in the report, that we need to stop being coy about some of the crimes that we're dealing with. We are talking about very large numbers of offences and offending, and we need to get the police given the powers and backed to be able to do this sort of stuff, stop and search and live facial recognition. And at the moment, some of the backing from political leaders equivocates too much, is insufficiently confident in saying to police officers, you need to get out there and you need to use the lawful powers in an ethical way which Parliament has given you and go and stop these people who are causing carnage on our streets.
Grateful for your time today. David Spencer, thank you. You're a Detective Chief Inspector at the Met. You're now Head of Crime and Justice at the Policy Exchange, who authored this report. You'll have seen it. Tragically, you possibly know of friends or you know of families who have lost people or who have certainly been injured to knife crime. This, we're not even checking it. It's advancing at a horrific speed. 86% in this town, 78% across the whole of the country. Any ideas how to check it? After the news, we'll hear someone from someone who lost her son to knife crime and is campaigning in this field. But the 8:16 LBC News headlines are next, read by Thomas Watts.
One of the most powerful earthquakes ever recorded has triggered tsunami warnings across the Pacific. Israel has accused the UK of appeasement towards terrorists by moving to recognise a Palestinian state. And ministers have started a property company to oversee the development of surplus railway land. LBC weather, most places dry with sunny spells. Eastern England and Scotland could see some showers, a high of 24 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. One lane is closed on the M25 due to a vehicle tyre change clockwise at Junction 2 for the Darrant Interchange. The M11 is stop-start southbound before Junction 4 for the A406 North Circular Road. In Limehouse, one lane is blocked on the A13 Commercial Road because of a broken-down van eastbound at Butcher Road. There are queues in Clapham on the A3 Clapham Common south side in both directions around Clapham Common Station. That's due to overrunning engineering works. Things are slow in Park Royal on the A406 North Circular Road southbound at the A40 Western Avenue. And on the tubes, there's no service on the Jubilee line between Wembley Park and Stanmore due to a fire alert. And there are minor delays on the Bakerloo line.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the all-new LBC app. Download it for free from the App Store.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow. Rooftop cinema time.
Six packs of popcorn. I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda. Clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated and happily doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Explore the world in a way that respects the people and places you visit with Intrepid Travel. As UK and Ireland GM Joanna Reeve explains.
Our trips are all about small groups guided by amazing local leaders. So we really want you to experience the places most tourists overlook, which is great for you, but also it's really good for the communities you visit. So think about travelling out of season, look for experiences far beyond the typical tourist hotspots, avoid crowds and visit a Greek farm for some delicious local food.
To find out more, search Intrepid Travel. We're not over tourism.
Do you like the sound of work that has plenty of giggles? Where you'll build lifelong skills, as well as wobbly towers. Where you'll feel part of a team, or even have the chance to lead one. Where every little thing you do makes a big difference. Do something big. Work with small children. Search Early Years Careers to find out more.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 after 8, the rise and rise of knife crime, as I told you earlier. 86% in 10 years across London, 78% in 10 years nationwide. Let's bring into the conversation Lisa Theobald, who lost her son Ryan to a knife crime back in 2022. And to prove this was outside of London, this took place in Doncaster. Thank you very much for coming on. Have you thought of what a solution might be? Morning.
Morning. I don't think there's a, you know, an instant solution. I know South Yorkshire Police are doing a lot at the moment. There's lots of different things going on. You know,
what sort of things are they doing, Lisa?
So I know there's a lot more stop and searches being done. Mm-hmm. I am working closely with the Deputy Mayor of South Yorkshire. We've got a meeting coming up.
Right. And what will that meeting be to discuss?
I'm not sure at the minute.
Right, okay.
But it does include, I know it's going to be including going to more primary schools, you know, because I do know there is an issue in these primary schools in Doncaster.
And when you say the issue, what is the issue there, Lisa?
There's definitely issues of knife crime. You know, my sister works at a school, a primary school. She's had to have the police in many a times, you know, to have talked with the kids about knife crime. Mm. And there was plenty of schools in Doncaster, not just primary schools, which have had knife crime issues. Mm. You know, not all will say that they've got a problem, but I know otherwise.
It's approaching 3 years since you lost your son, Ryan. Do you think
4 years? Yeah.
Is it 2022? Was it 2022?
Yes, so it'll be 4 years in January.
4 years in January, OK.
Yeah.
Has the situation got worse?
Definitely, without a doubt. The knives are getting bigger. You know, I see videos all the time on social media of what they're doing. You know, the kids are at such a young age, and I'm talking under 10 years old, you know, they're carrying knives. There's, you hear about knife crimes in town on, you know, at the weekends. Well, not just even the weekends, it's all through the week. But I know the clubs there, I don't know if they've got them at the moment, but they are getting trauma kits given to them.
Right.
So that they, you know, such as what happened with Ryan, you know, one of the door staff could help.
This was at, of course, it was, I believe, in a nightclub, wasn't it, that the events took place in Doncaster?
It was, yes.
Yeah. Let me ask you, and you'll have thought about this, obviously thinking of your boy for nearly 4 years, why do kids carry knives?
I have no idea, but I'm sick of hearing and say I carry it for protection. Mm. It's a load of rubbish. If you're carrying a knife, you're going to use it. Definitely.
Lastly, I hear that you're working with the local authority, and that's obviously good. But do you think politicians, and of course you lost your son on a previous administration, on the Conservative administration, do you think politicians are doing enough here?
I think they need to give more powers back. I mean, sentencing is absolutely ridiculous. You know, I do know that judges are wanting to give harsher sentences, but they're, you know, they have a cap, you know, and they just can't go past it.
Thanks, as ever, for talking, Lisa. Lisa Theobald, you've campaigning in this area now, you lost your son. Ryan to knife crime up in Doncaster. Richard says, until we return to age-based stop and search, this will continue. I'm 64. I don't carry a knife. Do you? It's mostly 12 to 30-year-old single men. Dan in Lambeth. I live in South London. We all know the vast majority of perpetrators are. They're also the community most impacted by the horrific issues. And Khan, as in Mayor Khan, does nothing about it. Neil's in Nottingham. Neil, you're on the radio. What do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Two comments, really. One was just a sort of bit of feedback on the interview that you did with the guy who's done the report.
Mm.
And really, I guess, listening to that objectively, as I suspect probably quite a lot of people are this morning, he described nothing there that I suspect a large percentage of the population wouldn't expect to already be in place and happening. And if that's really the level that we're at, it probably tells us quite a lot.
But well, it was going under on, the former Home Secretary, of course, that says stop and search was scaled back. Theresa
well,
May.
That's one element, but the main point I want to make is this. The country as a whole, but particularly the cities as well, or starting with the cities and starting with London, there needs to be a complete culture change around this. And by culture change, I'm not talking about just the people that carry the knives. Excuse me.
Mm.
I'm talking about the whole ethos around it. So if you were in private industry, for instance, or lots of other organisations, you know, they run organisational culture change. And there are a number of well-defined elements of what it requires to change a culture.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first things that's required is strong, visible leadership. One of the things about Sadiq Khan, perhaps, or whoever is in the position of London Mayor, is, and we've got to ask ourselves, when has anyone ever really offered any very high-profile, visible, strong leadership on knife crime?
What does that look like, lastly? What would that leadership look like, Neil?
Well, what it would look like would actually be making some statements, if you like, and talking with some passion about the issue, giving the impression, hopefully from a genuine place, that A, he's very concerned about it, and B, he is going to pull out all the stops to do things about it, whatever that takes. And that's obviously a multidisciplinary approach, of which there are a number of well-known elements, but also others. But consider this for a moment, Nick.
Briefly, if you would.
Okay, very briefly.
Thank you, sir.
If you were wanting to change the underlying ethos, if you like, of people carrying knives, there's two reasons that people carry them that we know. One is that obviously people carry them with ill intent, and the other reason is that people will say, I have to carry one because if I don't, yeah. I'm not going to be able to protect myself. Right. What is stopping Sadiq Khan, or come to that, the government more widely, saying, look, in 3 months' time, anyone caught with a knife on them, whether it's for self-defence or whether it's for or purported self-defence or other reasons, will receive an automatic jail sentence.
And that is where I think we have to get tough, Neil. I must end it there. But you ask, where is the will and where is the high visibility? If I was the mayor, I would get with the Commissioner of Metropolitan Police, and just picking a borough at random, Croydon, I would have a 20,000 bomber raid on Croydon. Every police unit I could think of, the dogs, the horses, the helicopters, we would hit it for a week. We would own Croydon for a week. No one would move in Croydon that I didn't know about. And once we'd nicked all the bags, and I know they'll all run off to Lambeth, don't worry, we'll then follow and we will work our round. There will be 20,000 bomber raids on each borough every other week until we solve the problem, with me and the Commissioner strolling around in high-vis vests, nicking people. Unfortunately, it does not appear to be the will. Neil, thank you for your input. Let's go to other stories. Now, a row brewing. The minister defending the Jimmy Savile swipe at Nigel Farage. The original comment, Science and Technology Secretary Peter Kyle, speaking on Sky News.
We have people out there who are extreme pornographers, peddling hate, peddling violence. Nigel Farage is on their side. Make no mistake about it, if people like Jimmy Savile were alive today, he'd be perpetrating his crimes online. And Nigel Farage is saying that he's on their side.
So how did Mr. Farage respond?
This is so absolutely disgusting that it's almost beyond belief. Just how low can a Labour government sink in its desperation? Frankly, to say that I would do anything that would in any way aid and abet people like Jimmy Savile. It's so below the belt, it's almost not true.
Now, it has been reported that these comments were sanctioned by Number 10. In the previous hour, I spoke with Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander. Would she use such language?
Nigel Farage is the leader of the Reform Party, and it is his stated position and his party's stated position to repeal the Online Safety Act in its entirety. So a logical conclusion of what he is saying at the moment is that he is happy for, you know, this type of content to be online, and for, you know, he wants to get rid of all of those offences that have been created in the Online Safety Act. Because he said that he wants to get rid of the Online Safety Act, and that is a consequence of getting rid of the Online Safety Act. The people who have been convicted, the people who have been convicted of, you know, cyber flashing, which is a offence committed, an offence created by the Online Safety Act. And let's be clear, there have been individuals that have been convicted of cyber flashing in recent months as a result of that Online Safety Act. But if you get, you know, this is people sharing indecent images with 15-year-old girls. If Nigel Farage wants to... But he is saying that he wants to get rid of the Online Safety Act, which would mean that those sorts of...
But that doesn't mean his campaign to make this widely available.
Those sorts of offences would then disappear. So it's on him to set out what he would do to protect children online. And at the moment, all of the evidence is that the Reform Party are not making this a priority.
Big piece in one of your papers today, the Daily Mail, by Dan Hodges, political commentator for the Mail on Sunday. Dan joins me now. Okay, there's no backtracking here. Why are they using this language? Morning.
Morning. Well, it's a good old-fashioned political smear, to be honest. I mean, obviously, the initial comments were from Peter Kyle, but I spoke to Downing Street yesterday, and Downing Street were very clear that they were standing by the comments, and I think privately, Labour aides are delighted at the row. They feel they've got Nigel Farage on the back foot over this. I personally think the opposite. I think before the election, we heard a lot from Keir Starmer about changing the nature of politics and the nature of political debate. And I think, actually, this has shown that Labour and Keir Starmer to be quite hypocritical when it comes to this sort of political knockabout.
Because they're rattled, Dan?
Yes. I mean, to be perfectly honest, Nigel Farage is currently living rent-free in Keir Starmer's head. I mean, Reform remain ahead in the polls. Their poll lead is actually starting to widen again. And Keir Starmer just simply cannot find a way of tackling Farage. He thinks the Tories are sort of an irrelevance at the moment, but he can't find a way of dealing with Reform.
Would you, and you reference this in your piece, you agree, Peter Kyle is one of the more assured media performers for them, isn't he?
No, absolutely, and that's why his comments yesterday, quite clearly, they weren't a gaffe, they weren't Peter Kyle freelancing, they were, as I say, effectively a sanctioned hit by Number 10 on Nigel Farage. Whether or not it'll have the desired effect, though, I have my doubts.
Always joy speaking with you. Check out Dan's piece, Dan Hodges, political commentator for The Mail on Sunday, 8:32. Coming up after the news, reportedly on the run, the far-right agitator Tommy Robinson, who allegedly punched a man to the ground at a railway station. A full report. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. It is, as I said, 8:32. News headlines then, Thomas Watts.
A massive earthquake, one of the strongest ever recorded, has triggered tsunami warnings across the Pacific. Parts of the US, Japan and some islands are covered by evacuation orders. The Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, has told Nick that Britain is not rewarding Hamas by moving towards recognising a Palestinian state. Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, has accused the UK of appeasement towards terrorists. A five-day strike by resident doctors across England has come to an end. The British Medical Association has refused to rule out further walkouts in its row over pay. LBC weather mostly dry with sunny spells. Eastern parts of England and Scotland could see some showers later. A high of 24 degrees.
This is LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Feel the thunder of hooves. The tension as they race past. Your heart in your chest. That split second of silence. Before the roar of the finish. That glorious Goodwood feeling. Qatar Goodwood Festival, presented by Visit Qatar, July 29th to August 2nd. Book now.
When you're transported somewhere you've never been. When you discover hidden gems and amazing sights. When you just can't wait to pack your bags.
It's just stunning.
We should definitely go there.
I'm already looking at flights.
Nice.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels so you can enjoy a world of travel from the comfort of your sofa. Search TV licence together.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming up on 8:35, should tell you a lot of people still contacting us about Sir Keir Starmer's position on Palestine, a story to which we shall return, I assure you. I don't think for a moment that we're stopping your conversation. We're not. We're back at that in the next hour. And I've said on at least one occasion, we will try and lift the mood. It's a very, very serious news day. But we will look at the celebrations. Roughly 65,000 people turned out in central London to celebrate the Lionesses roaring to victory. We're also keeping a close eye on Japan, Hawaii and other parts of the Pacific region as this potential tsunami threat, so it's a busy morning. Let's come to other matters. And reports that the far-right campaigner, Tommy Robinson, shouted, "Come at me then," and an older man, at an older man he was arguing with at St Pancras Station for allegedly punching him so hard he fell to the ground. LBC's reporter Henry Riley has more details in the studio with me now. Henry, morning.
Morning, Nick. Police have confirmed they want to question the far-right activist Tommy Robinson after the alleged assault at St Pancras railway station in London. Paramedics were called on Monday evening, shortly after 8:30. Now, video footage emerged showing Mr Robinson, who of course his real name is Stephen Yaxley Lennon, walking back and forth near a motionless man lying on the floor at the station. In the footage, Robinson walks next to the person who's lying face down on the floor. It doesn't show how the man ended up there, but the video has been shared on social media.
Just to clarify, this just Henry, just let me interrupt you. Can we get some help over here being shouted by a good Samaritan then? reportedly, he actually then is saying, he effing came at me, bruv. He came at me, bruv. You saw that, Henry?
That's right. And you can see a fellow commuter who's asking for help, and then two station staff come over. And as you say, that is what is being reported. What it sort of seems he said, he came at me, he's come at me. You saw that. The Daily Mail are reporting a witness as hearing Mr. Robinson shout, come at me then. The British Transport Police said officers found a man with serious but non-life-threatening injuries. They say a 42-year-old male suspect from Bedfordshire, who they did not name, had boarded a flight out of the country in the early hours of yesterday morning. Detectives are continuing to investigate. We know the London Ambulance Service has said a man was taken to a major trauma centre. Now, Tommy Robinson hasn't commented publicly, Nick, but has been active on social media, including reposting supportive messages. One post that I've seen he shared is, quotes, the media is lying to you about Tommy Robinson fleeing the country. And then in another post he has shared, he says, if you approach someone with hostility, a man that received death threats daily, expect to get a clip round the ear hole. But as I say, Tommy Robinson himself hasn't commented.
Okay, couple of things. What do we know of the alleged victim?
Well, all we know from the London Ambulance Service,
he's all right.
He had serious injuries and was in a major trauma centre, non-life threatening, but still serious injuries.
And are the police telling us to which country it is alleged Mr. Yaxley-Lennon has flown?
No, they're not. And in their statement, they don't name Stephen Yaxley-Lennon, but they do say a 42-year-old man from Bedfordshire, but they're appealing to question him, but they have not put out any sort of suspects, any sort of whereabouts he might be.
A lot of a story to develop, isn't there?
Yeah.
Okay, Henry Riley reporting. Let's come back. 8:38. Let's come back. Nigel and Temple Fortune. We're talking about knife crime across the whole of the country, but particularly in London. I think it's London you want to talk about. Morning, Nigel.
Morning. Well, Nick, I used to work at the Evening Standard, you know.
I know you did. You were what we call a snapper.
I was, and I've seen you in my lens a few times, and you look fantastic. But I wanted to say that during my time, I covered virtually every murder in London for my 26 years, and it was horrific, and some of the things I've seen were just shocking. I mean, really shocking. But I want to expand on this story, if I may, a couple of ways moving forward.
Please, yeah,
I've been married for 3 years, and I've been with my wife for 8 years.
Congratulations.
And she came with me, thank you, she came with me to America for the first time some years ago when we first met. And she's very senior in social services and deals with the victims of crime, child trafficking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And she could not believe how safe she felt there compared to here. And that's quite a statement to make.
Is Las Vegas you're at?
Yeah, Las Vegas, that's right. Yeah, and she felt much safer there and in California. And that's a really interesting statement for somebody who's never been there before, the police presence and the way they sort of deal with things. I think what's interesting, two things. You had the gentleman, I think, with a politics change. I think stop and search is a tool that works very, very well, but it's fundamentally undermined by a flaw in its service. Years ago, the police used to fill out a form called a 5090, which they used to give to the recipient of a stop and search as a record. That doesn't happen anymore. And what they should do, what they should do is when a person is stopped and searched, allow them to get a copy of the body-worn video, which clearly not only does it protect the person being stopped and searched, but it protects the police officer against any vexatious allegations. It's a record of what's going on. I think that would be really important. And the other thing, the other quick 2 points, if I may, let's not forget that Sadiq Khan is a crime commissioner for London. Yeah, under his watch, crime has risen like a rocket.
Yes.
That's the first point. And the last point, which I think was interesting, what you mentioned about you'd blitz Croydon. Well, disappointingly, in 1981, the police blitzed Brixton in an operation called Swamp 81, which resulted in the streets catching fire. If I was a commissioner, and if I was Sadiq Khan, I would fundamentally have a much more assertive, strong approach to knife crime. It's completely and utterly out of control.
26 years as a photographer on the London Evening Standard, so you'll have been out on shouts, you'll have gone to, sadly, many cases where mostly young people have met their lives. Did you notice towards the end of your career how much more regular that was, Nigel? How did the numbers go?
It was growing all the time. It was really, really awful. And, you know, and the most interesting thing that I think I took from it all, it wasn't just happening in areas where people think it's going to happen. It was happening much more, let's say...
like the man in Knightsbridge, you got fatally stabbed.
Exactly. The guy killed outside the hotel casino. This is happening in all areas all over London. And if people think it's a gang-on-gang problem only. They are fundamentally mistaken. This is less the gang-on-gang postcode problem. It's people walking along the street who can't walk along with a nice handbag or a watch or a nice piece of jewellery or a pair of rings or whatever it may be. It's happening everywhere.
Nigel, look after yourself. Thank you. Sandy and Amersham, your take on this story. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I think the crime level in London is horrifying. I've always loved London. I like going into London, but I have a different view on it now. And I felt safer in New York by far than I feel in London.
Why? In what way? Were there more police officers? Because it's roughly the same size, roughly the same population.
Yeah, but there's police presence. You feel, I mean, it just puts that safety, that element of safety around, because they're around.
Does it matter they carry a gun? Do you feel more secure that they're armed? Less secure? Does it make no difference?
No, it makes no difference.
Right.
They don't have to be armed. They need to be there.
Right.
And I just cannot believe how it's gone downhill in London since Khan has been mayor. All he succeeds in doing is blaming everyone and everything.
Well, the problem is he can't blame the Conservative government anymore, of course, can he?
No, he can't.
That used to be the get-out at all times.
Yeah. But he's always got a reason why. I mean, I don't know how he's been re-elected three times. I just don't understand it, because he's really let London down.
Well, you talk to any taxi driver and they agree with you, but you can't argue with the numbers. He's done it. He's a three-time winner. For many, it is extraordinary. Sandy, thank you. Mohammed's in Ealing. You're on the radio, Mohammed. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Hope you're doing pleasantly well.
Yes.
First and foremost, can I give out a great shout out to our beautiful lionesses bringing the Euros home on Sunday?
Of course.
They bring us great energy.
You'll have no argument from me on that, my friend. It lifts the heart.
What I wanted to say to you, Nick, is, and I hope I can articulate this as best as I can, knife crime is an epidemic across the country, specifically in London.
Yep.
And I think there are many layers that cause these issues. The main problem is we've had 20 years of bad governance, which have destroyed many institutions that
help. Do you mean London or nationally?
Nationally. You know, if you look at, you know, all the leaders that help, majority of knife crime is young men and young boys. And you look at the levers of state that normally support young people. You've got education, the police, social services. All those departments have had complete and utter cuts over 20 years and have had lack of investment. At the same time, we've got issues where young men don't have male role models, whether that's their father, whether that's their uncle.
That's an issue.
I think that's a major issue. You know, mothers do an amazing job up across the land, day in, day out. But unfortunately, young boys, they need to have that, you know, steering, that, you know.
How important, lastly, was your dad to you, Mohammed?
Oh, my dad! I lost my dad last year in September, last year, and I struggled with his loss every single day. And he played probably the most important part in my life, and I try and play the same part to my children.
Good on you. I'm sorry, I didn't realise it. I would never have asked if I'd known. My apologies, it's still very raw. Best wishes to you, to Mohammed, and I feel exactly, I was blessed with having the most extraordinary dad. Funnily enough, for reasons I won't bore you with, I'm tidying out a bedroom at the moment, it doesn't matter. But I've come across all sort of, and suddenly I've seen pictures of my dad I haven't seen for like decades, and it all comes back. God, I was lucky to have him as a father. Talk about Nigel Farage and the use of that language. Rees says the attack on Farage is just the latest example of how Labour tried to shut down dissent by throwing baseless accusations around. If you complain about online safety or act, you're a friend of child molesters, complain about migrant hotels, you're a far-right racist. Faith says, since when are people who are concerned about their privacy pro-paedophiles? It's not a logical conclusion at all. With the Labour Party's track record on non-crime incidents, arrests and sentencing related to social media posts, nobody trusts this government. We'll stick with it. Talking about this government, what about the opposition? Kemi Badenoch.
I think that this is a prime minister trying to look like a world statesman, but still appearing to be somebody who's on the back foot.
That's her assessment of Sir Keir Starmer's position on Palestine. We'll hear from her colleague, Shadow Foreign Secretary Dame Priti Patel, after the 8:46 LBC News headlines read by Thomas Watts.
A massive earthquake has struck off the coast of eastern Russia, triggering tsunami warnings across the Pacific. Israel's prime minister has condemned Britain's plan to follow France in recognising a Palestinian state. And a five-day walkout by resident doctors in England has come to an end. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, a high of 24 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. One lane is closed on the M25 due to a vehicle tyre change clockwise at Junction 2 for the Darrant Interchange. Also on the M25, a lane is blocked anti-clockwise on an entry slip road due to a broken down vehicle at Junction 24 for Potter's Bar. The M11 is stop-start, southbound before Junction 4 for the A406 North Circular Road. In Limehouse, one lane is blocked on the A13 Commercial Road because of a broken down van eastbound at Butcher Road. There are queues in Clapham on the A3 Clapham Common South side in both directions around the station. That's due to engineering works. And on the tubes, there's no service on the Jubilee line between Wembley Park and Stanmore due to a fire alert, and there are minor delays on the Bakerloo line.
This is LBC.
Welcome to Boots. How can we help?
Can I book my flu jab here?
It stings when I wait. Is that normal?
Do you have a chicken pox vaccination service here too? How can I soothe my daughter's insect bites?
Dad, do we need any travel vaccinations for Bali? Got any more questions? No worries, we can help. Protect, check and manage your health with Boots. No need for a GP appointment. Boots, with you for life. Services subject to availability and eligibility criteria. Charges may apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Explore the world in a way that respects the people and places you visit with Intrepid Travel. As UK and Ireland GM Joanna Reeve explains.
Our trips are all about small groups guided by amazing local leaders. So we really want you to experience the places most tourists overlook, which is great for you, but also it's really good for the communities you visit. So think about travelling out season, look for experiences far beyond the typical tourist hotspots, avoid crowds and visit a Greek farm for some delicious local food.
To find out more, search Intrepid Travel. We're not over tourism.
Okay, train from London to peaceful Peterborough.
Ning Park this way, huh?
Gorgeous. Wow. Never thought I'd be this into bird watching.
Did you see it? Lovely plumage.
Train home. Brilliant day. Oh, gotta rent bikes next time to see the Big Lake. And more birds, obviously.
Download the Thameslink Railway app and save with advanced tickets. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Psst, have you heard?
About what?
About Boots Optician's ultimate eye test with OptiMap scan.
Why are you whispering?
I think it's for VIPs. It's an in-depth look into your eye that can detect health conditions that other eye scans might miss.
Why are you still whispering?
I can't seem to stop.
Book an eye test and ask about OptiMap in-store at Boots Opticians, rated the UK's favourite opticians.
Selected stores, charges apply. Google review data, May 2024 to May 2025 of national chain opticians only. Contact marketing at boots-opticians.co.uk for details.
Feel the thunder of hooves, the tension as they race past, your heart in your chest, that split second of silence before the roar of the finish. That glorious Goodwood feeling. Qatar Goodwood Festival, presented by Visit Qatar, July 29th to August 2nd. Book now.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10 to 9, and the moment to lift the spirits, celebrating the fantastic victory over Spain in the Euro 2025 final in Basel in Switzerland. 65,000 people turned out to central London to celebrate, one of whom was LBC's very own lioness, Helen Hoddenott, and she filed this report.
Massive celebration for a historic win. The Mall was a sea of red and white. People started arriving from 5 a.m. to get the prime spaces next to the railings. This fan was one of the first to get there.
I started playing football in 2022 because of the Lioness win the Euros. It's almost like I'm thanking them because I wouldn't be playing football if I didn't see them play in the Euros.
Over the morning, tens of thousands more fans joined. Faces were painted, horns were blaring, and girls were hoisted onto shoulders to get the best view of their heroes. Celebrations kicked off after midday with a marching band getting the crowd going. Then an open-topped bus emblazoned with the word champions, carrying the Lionesses, made its way down the Mall. The squad was waving, cheering and dancing with the trophy held at the front.
Absolutely brilliant. It was really good.
I saw Chloe Kelly. It's so cool.
Yeah, we saw all the players. It was really fun.
The team then gathered on a stage in front of Buckingham Palace for the homecoming ceremony. Manager Serena Wiegmann was joined by her favourite artist. Leah Williamson thanked fans.
I've been crying all the way down the mile. This is unbelievable. It's probably one of the best things we've ever been a part of. So thank you for coming out. Obviously, we do it for us and our team, but we do it for the country and we do it for young girls. This job never existed 30, 40 years ago, and we're making history every single step. Thank you so much.
Heather Small joined the Lionesses on stage to sing her song Proud, which the team played as a good luck ritual before each match. And red fireworks were set off as the trophy was lifted one more time.
That was LBC's Helen Hoddenott reporting. Why is it every time you think, you just smile when you think what those women have achieved? It just puts a smile in your face. Everything that's great about England, can I argue, everything that's great about Britain as well. Fantastic. I know it was the England team, but fantastic for the day. And well done. I hope you had a lovely... No arrests, no problems. 65,000 people came in, had a great day of celebration. All go home safely. Helen Hoddenott's report. 7 minutes before nine, let's go to other matters. No smiling over this story, although I will admit I did see a smile on the countenance of Shadow Foreign Secretary Dame Priti Patel as she listened to that report concerning the Lionesses, and she joins us from our Westminster studio. Serious matter we have to discuss, though, although I can tell you enjoyed the Lionesses just as much as I did, Dame Priti.
Good morning,
so we can celebrate that moment before we move on. Political events since then. Sir Keir Starmer's stance on the recognition of Palestine. Where do you stand on that, Dame Priti?
Well,
good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Well, look, first of all, everybody wants to see an end to this absolutely appalling conflict, but we need sustainable and a lasting peace. And that cannot be achieved unless there's a formal peace process, and clearly that is not underway right now. So I'm afraid Keir Starmer's pronouncement yesterday of recognising Palestine is simply, it's an appeasement to his backbenchers who have been calling for this for weeks and months basically, and I've seen that myself in the House of Commons when I've pressed the government something like 22 times around the situation in Gaza. It's not going to deliver a lasting sustainable peace. There is no peace process, and we saw last week, of course, the United States, their envoy, Steve Witkoff, he withdrew his negotiators from the ceasefire talks because he said Hamas were not acting in good faith. And we should always remember, Nick, that this situation is taking place because of Hamas and October the 7th. Hamas is a terrorist organisation that basically is running amok in Gaza, that is inflicting pain on the people of Gaza. And what's Britain's response? Britain's response basically is to say, let's recognise Palestine rather than enter a formal peace process and find practical solutions to end this dire situation.
Dame Priti, what is the Conservative Party's position regarding recognition of Palestine?
Well, first of all, we've always said that we would recognise Palestine in the right way at the right time. And I tell you what that means. That basically means that we have to have a formal peace process. And you can't recognise Palestine at the start of something. You have to recognise the state of Palestine only through the work that takes place with a formal peace process. And of course, that would look at the governance of Palestine. We know that the Palestinian Authority has failed. It has basically become a failed governance body. Israel left Gaza back in 2005, if you remember, and the PA, the Palestinian Authority, came in to run it. And then guess what? They failed, and they failed because Hamas came in and took over it. We need to have proper governance structures. We need to be working with our friends and allies in the region, the Abraham Accords partners. And also, there's something very important to say here. Britain should have really stepped up months ago when it came to aid and finding new routes to get aid into Gaza. And this government has not done that. I've pressed the government many times, 22 times in Parliament on this whole issue. It was the last Conservative Foreign Secretary, David Cameron, that worked with the Israeli government to get aid in through new aid routes and get new aid road routes opened up. And this government has simply not done that.
To clarify then, if Sir Keir goes ahead with recognition in September, would a future Conservative government de-recognise Palestine, if there is such a
word. Well, we don't know, Nick, what the situation is going to be. And I have to say, I heard, and she may have spoken to you this morning, the government minister that was doing the morning round effectively say that they're going to keep this under review and review this in September. Well, I'm afraid this isn't like a domestic piece of legislation where you keep it under review. You have to work constructively. The art of diplomacy is finding solutions, a deeply challenging and quite frankly horrific situation in the world. What we have is a Labour government that spends most of its time issuing joint statements with other countries, hiding behind other countries, and issuing condemnations to Israel. Those condemnations are not feeding people in Gaza right now or finding a peace plan when it comes to Palestine and a lasting, sustainable peace. That's our position. Our position is that we would absolutely be at the table to find solutions to this terrible situation and, importantly, Nick, to find a lasting peace for the region, which is what this government is not working through.
But Dame Priti, I know you well, and you will be appalled at the images of people starving, unable to get food, unable to get medical aid. If you agree that you have to show a level of unrest or frustration with Israel, how is that to be shown?
Well, first of all, issuing condemnations is not feeding more people. I mean, I think we should recognise that,
first of all. But how do you learn? Do you have a degree of displeasure towards Israel?
Well, of course, in terms of actions and activities, you show it in the way in which previous Conservative governments have done so. I've made it quite clear. It was the last Conservative Foreign Secretary that actually was at the table with the Israeli government rather than just giving statements on the sidelines. You have to work with people to the extent that you raise your concerns, 100% you do that, but you find practical solutions. Well, it was a previous Conservative government that did that. And Nick, by the way, let me add something else to the aid situation. Britain has a proud record because we have a lot of expertise when it comes to aid delivery and humanitarian crises. Where is that expertise right now? Instead, we've got a Labour government that basically says, oh, it's only for the UN to get aid into Gaza, when we know that Israel has concerns about the UN's own track record when it comes to aid delivery, and that Hamas themselves were effectively helping themselves to some of that aid that, by the way, we pay for.
Final question on a different matter, if I may. Do you think Nigel Farage is on the side of Jimmy Savile over the online safety measures?
Well, look, I thought those comments by the Labour Minister yesterday, the Science Minister, totally, absolutely ridiculous and inappropriate. I mean, you know, that's for him and Nigel Farage to square that circle. What I would say, I felt that was a distraction from the government actually doing the job of getting on and leading with the implementation of the Online Safety Act. That act has taken years to come together. I was Home Secretary at the time. We were working to protect children online. Comments like that will not help to keep children safe online. That is now the responsibility of this government, and they should now be fixing that situation.
Former Home Secretary, Shadow Foreign Secretary Dame Priti Patel, thank you for your time laying out the Conservative stance, and that is the subject to which we shall return. As the music starts, we are moving on, but we're moving on by coming back to that and the story with which we started the whole show. This recognition of Palestine, remember, it's 41 days away, this conference in September. 41 more days of children starving, people being denied medical aid. Is that really the way forward? Plus another story, more than half of young people have considered leaving Britain. I'll be asking why. Here is one, Ollie White. He's an influencer. He's gone to Dubai.
I'm leaving the UK and I'm moving to a different country. It's unsafe. You can't even walk down the road holding your phone without fear of someone stealing it. And I've just felt so uninspired.
If you're a young person or you have children who are thinking the same, we'll explore that. 9 o'clock news on LBC's Next Though.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, some 1.9 million people in Japan have been placed under tsunami evacuation orders. Similar alerts are in force across the Pacific region after a massive 8.8 magnitude earthquake off the coast of eastern Russia. It was one of the most powerful ever recorded. LBC's Laura Westbrook says authorities are concerned about the next 24 to 48 hours.
We are expecting to get aftershocks and so Japan is very much staying on high alert. Its Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba has said there's a task force in place. It's assessing the situation. It said there are no injuries so far, but they have warned that subsequent waves could get bigger.
A cabinet minister's told Nick that Britain is not rewarding Hamas by moving towards recognising a Palestinian state. Sir Keir Starmer has promised to take that step by September unless Israel agrees to end the crisis in Gaza. Israel's prime minister's accused the UK of appeasing terrorists. The Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, says it is the right time to pull that diplomatic lever.
The decision for Israel is, does it want to be at the table shaping the enduring peace in the region? If so, it should take the actions that we have outlined. We will make an assessment about what it is right to do at that point in time, but we have been very clear in saying that at the moment, the prospect of a two-state solution seems to be vanishing.
The British Medical Association has refused to rule out further strikes after a five-day walkout in England. The action by resident doctors came to an end at 7 o'clock this morning. Both sides say they're willing to return to talks, but ministers say they won't budge on pay. Santander has confirmed it's cut more than 2,000 jobs as part of a cost-saving drive. The bank, which is in the process of buying TSB, has reported a 5% fall in half-year pre-tax profits to £764 million. And fans will get an opportunity to pay their respects to Ozzy Osbourne in Birmingham this afternoon. Large crowds are expected to line the route of the Black Sabbath star's funeral procession before a private ceremony. He died last Tuesday at the age of 76, weeks after playing a farewell gig in his home city. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading down 34 at 91.02. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells. Eastern parts of England and Scotland could see some showers later. A high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNCs apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after nine, Wednesday, July the 30th. Back to the story of the day. For many, of course, it's been your story of the day since the October attacks. It is a suggestion now that Sir Keir Starmer could offer official recognition of Palestine. Rewarding terrorism is how it's gone down in Israel. We'll come back to that conversation and, importantly, take your views. As we told you just before the news, a number of growing number of people aged 18 to 30. That could be a holiday organisation. Between 18 and 30 and considering leaving Britain. Are you one of them? Or am I speaking of your brother, your sister, your son, your daughter, whatever it might be? And if so, why? We cannot afford to lose bright, industrious, young people from this country because, of course, we have an ageing population as it is. And we'll come back to another major breaking news, this potential tsunami. Here's Hawaiian Governor Josh Green.
This is a very serious event. We have Black Hawks activated. We have high water vehicles ready to go. So we will be able to rescue people. But please do not put yourself in harm's way. Make sure you actually evacuate right now.
Now, he's speaking as waves on islands and atolls between Hawaii and Japan are hitting around 2 meters, around 6 feet. We'll be asking, actually, what causes tsunamis? What is it with these plates? What's happened underground, undersea, to potentially cause such devastation?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It has possibly been a long time coming, the idea that there will be official recognition of the State of Palestine by the British government. You'll hear more from Sir Keir Starmer on that in just a moment with the announcement he made in the House of Commons. But just lay out the groundwork. He talked about the substantive steps that need to be met, that need to be measured. And these are the pretty straightforward, but pretty difficult to achieve. He says that the Israeli government takes the substantive steps to end the appalling situation in Gaza, agree to a ceasefire and commit to a long-term sustainable peace, reviving the prospect of a two-state solution. His words were echoed the other side of the Atlantic by Foreign Secretary David Lammy. So now we know what the steps are. But what, respectfully, he and the Foreign Secretary seem to have ignored is that the internationally recognised Montevideo Convention of 1933 a state requires the following four criteria: a permanent population, a government, defined borders, and the capacity to conduct foreign relations. Even most pro-Palestinian supporters concede they don't meet those criteria. Certainly not one of them, probably not two. There are two governments, the Palestinian Authority led by Mahmoud Abbas on the West Bank, and Hamas in Gaza, a terrorist organisation. Shouldn't they be aware of that? Now, as I said in the first hour, if anything leads to the suffering, an end of the starvation, lack of medical supplies, lack of electricity, lack of water, lack of housing, that is to be, of course, applauded. But let's suppose Israel does, it won't, by the way, but let's suppose Israel does accede to the demands from the United Kingdom government. What, suddenly now we don't believe in a Palestinian state? Can you honestly go from "we believe in a Palestinian state"? By the way, Israel have just suspended hostilities, agreed to cease. "We don't believe in a Palestinian state." Does that even make sense? Here's what it all hinges on. Sir Keir Starmer yesterday.
"I've always said that we will recognise a Palestinian state as a contribution to a proper peace process at the moment of maximum impact for the two-state solution. With that solution now under threat, this is the moment to act. So today, as part of this process towards peace, I can confirm the UK will recognise the state of Palestine by the United Nations General Assembly in September unless the Israeli government takes substantive steps to end the appalling situation in Gaza, agree to a ceasefire, and commit to a long-term sustainable peace, reviving the prospect of a two-state solution."
Rather portentous manner there from the Prime Minister, isn't it? You almost think he's declaring war. And, of course, no shortage of opposition overseas or here in the UK. Sir Michael Ellis was the Conservative MP for Northampton North and served as Attorney General. He told me,
"Frankly, this is a ludicrous move by Starmer. And it's ludicrous because, for two main reasons. Legally, it isn't applicable. But secondly, it isn't going to work, for reasons that you've just adumbrated. The fact of the matter is, the Palestinian entity does not come close to meeting the legal requirements under the Montevideo Convention for the recognition of a state. One of those criteria is that it has to have recognised borders. Another is that it has to have a functioning government. So on at least two of the four criteria, it doesn't meet it. But in a sense, that's a legalism. What really matters to people is this sort of stunt going to work? It isn't. He's purported to give Israel in these threatening tones, and this is a man, by the way, who can't even stand up to Mauritius, a country of 200,000 people, when it comes to the Chagos Islands, and buckled to them. He's not going to stand up to Israel, and that's proven by the fact that Israel, within, never mind 6 weeks, within 6 hours, Israel has rejected the UK's stance outright and out of hand. This is not a position of strength from Keir Starmer, it's a position of weakness."
Sir Michael, I'm sure you want peace in the region as much as I do and as much as the listeners. Surely the way to achieve it is to keep Israel as an ally, to be a questioning ally, to sometimes be a confrontational ally, not to effectively put them completely offside. Sir Michael.
Absolutely right. I mean, the point about this is, where is the pressure on Hamas? You've got a vicious terrorist entity, the like of which is almost unparalleled in the modern era. All the pressure from the UK and from France, for that matter, is applied to Israel. Meanwhile, your partners, if you're the UK government at the moment, are Hamas, who throw gay people off bridges. And these are the people that you're not putting pressure on. You're seeking to put pressure on a democracy. It's a moral bankrupt position. Trump has already said it's rewarding Hamas, and it clearly is seeking to do so.
Let's pursue a little further the Conservative position, reminding you that Sir Michael Ellis, the former Conservative Attorney General, in the last 20 minutes or so, I spoke with Dame Priti Patel. She's the Shadow Foreign Secretary, particularly on the point of, if the Conservatives got into power, if there is such a thing as derecognition or unrecognition, would they unrecognise Palestine?
We don't know, Nick, what the situation is going to be. And I have to say, I heard, and she may have spoken to you this morning, the government minister that was doing the morning round effectively say that they're going to keep this under review and review this in September. Well, I'm afraid this isn't like a domestic piece of legislation where you keep it under review. You have to work constructively. The art of diplomacy is finding solutions, a deeply challenging and quite frankly horrific situation in the world. What we have is a Labour government that spends most of its time issuing joint statements with other countries, hiding behind other countries, and issuing condemnations to Israel. Those condemnations are not feeding people in Gaza right now or finding a peace plan when it comes to Palestine and a lasting sustainable peace. That's our position. Our position is that we would absolutely be at the table to find solutions to this terrible situation. And importantly, Nick, to find a lasting peace for the region.
Dame Priti Patel, let's get you on the radio. Ali in Slough, good to have you on. Sir, trust family as well. Your take on last night, on yesterday's events. Morning.
Very well. I'm very well, thank you. I hope you are too.
Yes, thanks, buddy.
There is not a scintilla of sincerity in what Starmer has said. Basically, Starmer represents the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, or Mr. Starmer and Keir Hyde, of the Western political mindset. This is no more than politicking over the corpses of those emaciated Palestinians who are being exterminated in an extermination camp called Gaza. Not a scintilla of sincerity in this at all.
What do you do to show your frustration with Israel?
Look, Starmer, his Jekyll and Hyde character, you know very well because you interviewed him, and he, flat in your face, despite you challenging him on it, said, yeah, they can starve them.
Yes, they can switch off water, they can switch off power. I remember that 2 years ago.
Right, so you were the man who reported it. So what are we talking? By the way, secondly, this is a pathetic attempt by France and Britain to remain relevant to Sykes-Picot being rewritten. America's doing it, and Britain's last attempt at this was Anthony Eden when he resigned after in humiliation, because Israel has switched sides to America. Israel is not going to sleep with Britain. Britain has no power anymore.
Let me ask you this. You and I have enjoyed speaking to you down the years. You will be feeling this keenly, the events in Gaza, I have no doubt. What is to be done then, realistically, Ali, by the British government?
The British government, if they were sincere, they would withdraw all support, expel the Israeli ambassador, cut all diplomatic ties. Oh. That would be a start.
Ali, do you not agree that it's better, even if you have confrontation as an ally, it's better to stay as an ally? Surely, what can you possibly achieve if you're not even in the tent?
History would be reckoning this, that we were allies of a genocidal regime, an apartheid regime, and a colonial regime. When the obituary of Britain as a power is written, or the Western, because we're in decline. This world,
I think, a lot
changing.
Of the West is in decline, by the way.
And when the obituary is written, no, I don't agree, by the way, Britain is illustrative rather than the example solely. The issue will be, when the obituary is written, we died defending a genocide and the scenes we haven't seen since the Second World War in Bosnia.
Ali, always enjoy speaking with you. If you have views, of course, about these conversations such as colonial genocide, genocidal, do give me a call. Remember, important to say, the activities of Hamas, of course, are also being investigated. It is sadly such a complex issue. Ali, be well. To Jerusalem. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Thanks for calling. How has the British position gone down in Jerusalem?
I mean, I'm ashamed to be British in Israel today. It's such a short-sighted move. It shows a complete lack of understanding of the Middle East. Quite frankly, Nick, if you were Hamas, would you give back the hostages now? What's the point?
Oh, God, I wouldn't.
Just hang on to September and you get crowned at the United Nations.
I see what you mean.
Nick, think about the Palestinians on the street. The moderate Palestinians, who we're told exist, although we've never heard from them, and we're told support peace, although we never hear their voice, are they going to claim this victory, or is Hamas going to claim this victory? What has Starmer just done to the Palestinian internal politics? He's not only rewarded terror, he's handed a victory to the extremist Islamist jihadi voices within the Palestinian street. It is such a catastrophe. And Nick, your last caller was a classic example of why this is a problem for the UK as well. Because the pictures coming out of Gaza are being disproven time after time. Yesterday we had video footage of Hamas shooting civilians as they try to get to the aid, which they're blocking. Okay. And the New York Times this morning has had to call a a correction on a picture they claimed was a Palestinian child being starved was actually suffering from a genetic disease.
Can I ask
you? It's just ludicrous.
This is the boy with the child with the back that's almost
spies. There's two cases.
Okay, a very graphic photograph, but I know that's been called into question. Lastly, Jason, do you fully support the Israeli government's actions?
I don't think anyone in a democracy fully supports every
government. Okay, so how, as United Kingdom, what do you do to make your dissatisfaction, your concern, relevant?
Very, very simple. You realign your values with morality, and you say the key to peace...
But some would argue it's not very moral to allow children to starve.
But Nick, that's exactly what I'm saying to you. The children who are starving in Gaza are starving because Hamas are not allowing the aid through.
Do you think Israel plays any role in that, Jason?
If Hamas were to hand back the hostages tomorrow, this wouldn't be a problem.
I have video footage of
Hamas terrorists sitting in tunnels, gorging themselves lavishly on food, boasting about the mangoes and the grapes that they have. We have videos of markets in Gaza stocked with food, and we have videos of Hamas terrorists stealing the aid trucks and shooting their rifles into the crowd who are trying to get the aid.
All right. Jason, thank you. That's the video that you have. I have to say there is a lot of, as you said right at the top, there's a lot of unverified videos. There's a lot of unverified still photographs going around. It is, as ever, unfortunately, is in the fog of war. Jason, be safe. Everyone be safe. Let peace reign. But is this the way to do it? We'll come back to that. I remind you, the internationally recognised convention, which the British government seems to have totally ignored, 1933 Montevideo Convention. Coming back to affairs back home, although sadly it's an exodus.
I'm leaving on a jet plane, don't know when I'll be back again.
More than half of young people, that's 18 to 30... could be a holiday company there, are thinking of leaving or have left Britain. But why? You'll find out after this. 9:17 LBC News Headlines. Thomas Watts.
A massive earthquake, one of the strongest ever recorded, has triggered tsunami warnings across the Pacific. The Transport Secretary's told Nick that Britain is not rewarding Hamas by moving towards the recognition of a Palestinian state. And a five-day strike by resident doctors in England has come to an end. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, some rain in the east, a high of 24 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. On the M4, a lane is closed eastbound from Junction 5 for Langley to Junction 4B for the M25. That's because of an accident. A lane is blocked on the M25 anti-clockwise on an entry slip road due to a broken down vehicle at Junction 24 for Potter's Bar. Also on the M25, one lane is closed due to a vehicle tyre change clockwise at Junction 2 for the Dant interchange. There are queues in Clapham on the A3 Clapham Common South side in both directions around the station. That's due to engineering works. And on the Tube services, is suspended on Windrush London Overground line between Dalston Junction and Highbury and Islington. There are severe delays on the Piccadilly line westbound between Cockfosters and Acton Town, and there's no service on the Jubilee line.
LBC.
There's always a lot going on. I'm on site getting the job done, running the business too, payments, invoices, admin, all on me. But now with Tap to Pay, I can take payments there and then, and Sage sorts the admin afterwards. Everything's sorted in the background so I don't spend hours doing it later. Magic.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience, helping British businesses like Mike at Residual Electrical Contractors. That's more than artificial intelligence. That's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms and minimum spend apply.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
4. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
Listen to LBC 921 News breaking at this time. The tsunami has now hit the US, one of the world's strongest ever earthquakes on record, striking in the Pacific early this morning. Waves are making what's called making landfall in Hawaii. Residents are still fleeing towards higher ground. It's an 8.8 magnitude earthquake. California now warning residents to stay away from the coast. Japan has just under 2 million citizens being evacuated. This story is only going to get bigger. We'll have more on it later in the hour. Right, the last caller was in Jerusalem. We now go to Dublin. Amanda, in Dublin, your reaction to what the British government has decided. Good morning.
Hi, hello, good morning. I hadn't heard of the Montevideo Convention before, so right. I just checked it out. Palestine actually complies with 3 out of the 4 convention criteria, and the other part of that
it doesn't have a recognised government, does it? The ones that I think...
It doesn't have a defined territory, it has a permanent population, it has a government, can enter relations with other states.
I would argue it doesn't have a government, because it's got Hamas and Gaza, and it's got Mahmoud Abbas on the West Bank, so it doesn't have a singular recognised government, is what I would say. And the other part you need for Montevideo is recognised borders. And that is very controversial, I would argue, although this is up for debate, I'll give you, but currently it doesn't have recognised borders, no?
It does have recognised borders, and the ICC has actually passed several resolutions for Israel to actually retreat from its occupation of those.
But there we are.
Defined borders.
Okay.
But the other thing is that Montevideo Convention says that if other countries recognise Palestine, then you are allowed to as well. So there are 147 countries out of 193 in the UN who have recognised Palestine, including Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
I do understand that criteria exists, but I do think that, according to lawyers for Palestine, Palestine does actually meet the criteria.
How will it stop children starving?
I think it will allow international law to be applied fairly. To stop children starving, Israel has to lift its blockade on Gaza. That is how it will stop.
Do you accept that perhaps not quite as the way Jason portrayed it, but that there is a lot of aid is taken, confiscated, stolen by Hamas?
My goodness.
I
listen to a lot of the doctors who are coming out of Gaza they are seeing starving children.
I agree. But just to that point, do you agree that some of the aid and the medical supplies are being stolen, hijacked, whatever, by Hamas? I'm not saying all, but some.
I don't think there's any evidence as such. You know, if somebody can show me evidence, but there isn't any evidence, just like Israel would say there's no evidence that we're starving children. You know, if you can't bring the evidence, then I don't know
point to video and still photographs and goodness knows what else. My final point is, and I sense that we're going to have to disagree agreeably, which is what a conversation is all about. My final point is, if Hamas is involved in taking the food and the aid, we wouldn't recognise them as a government, would you?
But if it's maybe militia groups that Israel is arming that's taking the food and the aid,
if you answer my question, you wouldn't, or even as a former senior politician pointed out, they throw gay people off bridges. You wouldn't want to recognise them as a government, would you?
I don't think there's any bridges to throw gay people off nowadays. They've bombed everything.
OK. That makes it all right, then. Amanda, thank you very much. I am going to agreeably disagree with you, but I'm very grateful for your input, and let's see what others make of what you say, and have a safe day in the super city of Dublin. More on that to come. Let's come back home. Rather disturbing report suggesting more than half of young people have considered leaving Britain, the Think Tank has discovered. Now, what does young people mean? 18 through 30. They have serious concerns about housing, personal finances, their future in the UK and their personal safety. They feel, and I quote, overtaxed, underhoused and undervalued. They've looked at the anxious generation. Research was carried out earlier this month. Given what we talk about so often, should we be that surprised? Jamie's in Bracknell. Are you fortunate enough to be in the age bracket 18 to 30, Jamie?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
Well, you say unfortunately. I'm completely the other end of the spectrum. I wouldn't mind having a few years off, but I don't know about that. What does life hold for you as you see it in the United Kingdom, Jamie?
I mean, we're reliant on our parents, and we're reliant on my generation getting politically attuned, you know.
What does that mean, sir?
Well, just not watching what's fed to you by these newspapers and news outlets that are run by billionaires in the best interest of billionaires.
Right.
You know, like you've got a guy like Elon Musk throwing Sig Heils out that owns Twitter.
Well, he claims it wasn't, but I know what you're saying. That's rather questionable use of his saluting.
I know, but he's also funded far right groups in Germany. So, like, if he didn't throw a Sieg Heil out, you wouldn't be voting for that far-right group, you know?
Okay.
So, well, it's just all these things. It's like, it's always on about, oh, we're not building enough houses, but no one ever mentions, like, why the government hasn't got any civil engineers. Like, every other country has an army of civil engineers.
Sorry, what do you mean? We don't have any civil engineers in this country?
We don't have builders and planners that work for the government. We have to outsource it to private businesses.
But were you listening this morning? The government have just announced this new Platform 4 that's going to build 40,000 homes and disused railway land.
Yeah, but they're going to ask a private business, a private property developer to do that.
No, it's a government organisation called Platform 4. It's combining...
That's a step in the right direction. We'll see how that goes.
I agree with you there, sir. Whether, you know, I've heard so many promises from so many ministers, from so many governments. I agree with you. But where would you go out of interest?
I wouldn't go to another, like, capitalist country, basically.
Mm.
Like, I'd want... Obviously, the communist countries, they wouldn't have me. You know, because obviously the way their immigration is. And I looked at Cuba, like, our government wouldn't pay my pension to Cuba.
Right.
You know, so it's all... And like,
what is the appeal of Cuba, living in...
Pardon?
What is the... Have you been to Cuba?
No, I haven't been to Cuba now, but I've known loads of people that have. My political attuned, yeah.
You know me, and I much as I love the country and the people, I would hate to live there. You know, some days... No. Most every day, people queue at food outlets, and they don't know what the food is going to be. They don't know if it's going to be chicken,
bread... What are you doing that here, though?
What?
We're doing that here with food banks.
Well, I think if you go to Sainsbury's or Asda, you know what's going to be on the shelves.
Yeah, an inflated price. We've been price gouged by Tesco, Sainsbury's. They've all stuck together and all put their prices up together. When you go to other countries, these same products are cheap.
Which country are you talking about now?
So I went to Turkey, for instance, and the same products in Turkey are cheap, much cheaper than they are over here.
What sort of products were they also?
Just biscuits, just stuff like that. Nothing like major. Like, I mean, all I was buying was like the food off the street and going into like a little shop buying food out there.
Well, it may be, of course, that the cost of living is cheaper in a country such as Turkey, but I don't know that Cuba's the future. So where do you think the future is, Jamie?
I think unless we sort something out about the corporations in this country, because every corporation, foreign corporation, wants to come to this country and they want to exploit our wage, basically, because we get paid a lot compared to other countries. So they can make something in their country, sell it to us for inflated prices.
I don't want you to do this, but if you were to take your shirt off, you'd probably see it was made in China or Mauritius.
Yeah, exactly.
If you were to take your shoes off. So they're not exploiting cheap because our labour's too expensive. That's why a lot of things are made in China.
No, yeah, but it's made in China because the government gives these companies subsidies. You know, the cost of living in China is much lower. you know, they don't get paid.
Yeah, but they decide to have the footballs and the trainers and the T-shirts made in China because labour is so cheap. That's nothing to do with the government.
Yeah, but, like, the labour's cheap. So our businesses in this country, for cheap labour, they say they want to look after our country, but when it comes to getting cheap labour, they move it straight away. Move it to a different country straight away.
All right. In 12 months' time... Last question, sir. In 12 months' time, how certain are you, how determined are you that you will not be in the United Kingdom?
Oh, no, I think with Corbyn's party coming, I want to see how this goes, because I've joined up already. I'm getting all my friends to join up.
OK. What is it called, the party?
It's called Your Party at the minute, which I don't mind the name of. You know, they're on about to call it the Left, the People's Party, and they're actually giving you a better alternative. All the other parties at the minute are all blaming the people below us, immigrants, when... It's the corporations and the tax dodgers. That's why we are struggling.
Okay. Jamie, thank you. Let's see how your party, the Left, whatever it's called, goes. We'll take more calls on that. Also, we'll update you on a developing story, this tsunami in the Pacific region. Captain Nick Verst is from the U.S. Coast Guard.
Small boats, ships, and planes and aircraft pre-deployed. So post-impact, we are ready to respond very quickly to any search and rescue cases.
And we'll have more on that after this. It's 9:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News then. Thomas Watts.
Large parts of the Pacific region are covered by tsunami warnings after a huge earthquake off the coast of eastern Russia. Nearly 2 million people in Japan have been told to move, with similar alerts in place in parts of the US. Israel's prime ministers accused Britain of rewarding terrorism by moving towards the recognition of a Palestinian state. Sir Keir Starmer says he will take that step in September unless Israel agrees to end the crisis in Gaza. A five-day strike by resident doctors in England has come to an end. Both ministers and the BMA say they are prepared to continue discussions with a view to averting further walkouts. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells. Eastern parts of England and Scotland could see some showers later. A high of 24 degrees.
This is LBC.
Calling all little explorers. The hunt for squishmallows is on. Who will your little one find in their Happy Meal? Would they chill out with Cam on the beach? Or rock on with Hallie? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 25th of August, from 11 a.m, Squishmallows comprise toys only. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
What makes a steak beautifully tender? Well, there's a secret ingredient. Patience. At Tesco, we mature our finest Aberdeen Angus sirloin steaks for 35 days. You see, the longer we wait, the more deliciously tender they become. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now we just sit back and wait. For 35 days. Tesco. Every little helps. Available in selected larger stores.
Lost World Play Barn. Dragon Castle Children's Farm. Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn. Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's continue our conversation concerning young people and the exodus. Helen in Leeds, listen to Jamie. I'm not sure a deciding factor to moving will be because of the price of biscuits. Same subject. This comes from Hannah. In Cuba, the population have to have powdered milk. Only those under 1 year old can have proper milk. The supermarkets consist of tomatoes and rum. The tourists get the special food. Well, I'm delighted to say that I can now speak of a position experience from Cuba because I have visited it. And it is the most stunning country with the most wonderful people. It would seem very little crime. You feel very safe. But as the drivers that we used told us, you go to the equivalent of the store, the supermarket, and you queue. And this is true. You don't know what you're going to get. You don't know if you're going to get bread. You don't know if you're going to get rice. You don't know if you're going to get chicken. You've no idea. Craig says, my son has just qualified as a physiotherapist with a first class honours degree. Congratulations. He and his Lithuanian girlfriend are looking to leave the UK. The NHS only advertising 9 physio jobs, and the cost of living is ridiculous. Christiane is in Peterborough. Christiane, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Good morning. Yes. So my daughter, 27 years old, on the 8th of August, she will be flying out to Dubai for 1 year. And
right.
She, yeah, and I'm...
You're very concerned about it. Of course you are. But you're excited for her as well.
I am. I'm very excited. She's been struggling for 2 years to find a decent, consistent job. She lives in London. Rents are expensive.
Rents are extortionate. What will she be doing in Dubai?
So she is a personal trainer, and she's been offered a 1 year contract. She went out there in March to do like the third stage of her interview.
Okay.
And they've confirmed she's been offered a contract, but they literally phoned her on Friday and said, "We want you to come out on the 8th of August." So she's got 2 weeks to finalize
everything.
And
is this a Dubai company or a British company or an American? It's a Dubai.
It's a Dubai company, and they're doing everything.
What happens with the visa? Does she get a 12-month visa or a 5-year?
Yes. No, they will give her, so this company, they were going to offer her a 1 year working visa. She will have medical and dental. And all she's got to do is find her own accommodation, which she's kind of doing right now. Mm. And she's selling her car. She's thinned down anyway because she knew this was coming, but it's literally now the last 2 weeks, it's just the last thin down and away.
How did she tell you? Mum, I'm leaving the country for a year. Yeah. How did she tell you?
I think it was coming anyway, because when she had the interview and everything, like I said, she flew out to Dubai for one of the stages of the interview, and it was accepted. So I kind of knew it was coming. But yeah, she phoned me on Friday and just said, "I've got to go. I've got to be there on the 8th of August."
So after the tears stopped, did you say well done?
Yes.
Of course you
I'm very pleased for her. She's young.
Yep.
No children. It's a great opportunity. When I was her age, I was traveling here, there, and everywhere. America, you know, Hawaii, everywhere. So,
if I took you back to your 27-year-old self, would you want to put roots down in this country, or would you think of acting in the way that you're? And she may well return. Of course, I don't want to say for a second she's not coming home. Yeah. But would you look to work overseas? Lastly, Christiane.
I have done, so I probably would, yes, I'd take the opportunity. I mean, I always came back here, but I think a lot of things have changed. So.
They have indeed. Wish her well. Christiane, thank you. Give her my best regards. I'm sure that the year will pass, not quite in the blink of an eye, and she'll have a great time. I'm sure you'll fly over there to see her as well. Christiane, thank you. Kennedy says, "Jamie, your caller talks sense and you got schooled. You won't read this out. 14 years of the Conservatives, 14 years of the Conservatives has made this country unattractive. Labour aren't doing much better. Reform is like a diluted Trump. Something needs to change." Kennedy, thank you. Rob says, "The grass is always greener. I'm an Australian who loves it in the UK, but I know a whole bunch of Brits who are loving it in Australia. It's something different that people want. I say open the visas between Canada, UK, Australia and New Zealand." Ollie, I'm going to talk to you about that in just a moment. But to breaking and developing news, this tsunami now, we know, has what's called made landfall in Hawaii, with residents fleeing to higher ground. It's an 8.8 magnitude earthquake. And in Japan, just a little under 2 million people have been ordered to evacuate. Let's go back to the US. Hawaii Governor Josh Green.
"This is a very serious event. We have Black Hawks activated. We have high water vehicles ready to go, so we will be able to rescue people, but please do not put yourself in harm's way. Make sure you actually evacuate right now."
So what exactly is happening? Tiziana Rossetto is Professor of Earthquake Engineering at the Technical University of Delft in the Netherlands, joins me now. Professor, thank you very much for your time. Can you explain in layman's terms, terms that anyone can understand, what has actually caused this? Good morning to you.
Good morning. Hello. Hi, Nick. This is an extremely large earthquake that has been generated due to the rupture of a tectonic plate between essentially the Pacific plate and the North American plate. So these are two plates that are converging together off the east coast of Russia at a tremendous rate. Actually, it's the fastest converging tectonic phenomena, basically, in the world. So it's an area that is very highly seismic. And this particular event is caused by the rupture of a fault, which is approximately the size of a whale.
Good.
So you can imagine the amount. Yes. You can imagine the amount of energy that's been released in this event. And because it happened under the water level, under the ocean level, it has generated a tsunami by pushing up the water above.
What created tectonic plates in the first place?
Oh, okay. So,
sorry about that one. There's an intake of breath there.
No, it's fine.
Come on, you've got 30 seconds. That'll do it.
Okay, that'll do. Okay, so the core of the Earth is extremely hot. It's over 2,000 degrees centigrade. And, you know, at the surface, we're, you know, lucky if we get 20 centigrade. So there's a big temperature difference. And what happens when there's a temperature difference is you get radiation of heat, either through radiation, but it's rock, so it doesn't do that very well. And what happens in the core of the Earth is actually we're getting convection currents. So you're getting these movements within the mantle, which is a semi-liquid state.
Right.
And when it reaches the crust, which is rigid, it effectively starts to move the parts of the crust. And the crust being rigid, it cracks, and those it forms a number of plates, and they move basically sliding against each other or subducting, i.e. one part of the crust goes underneath another one.
You're an expert in this field. I'm merely a journalist, so I just look at sort of past evidence. And if I take you back to the so-called Boxing Day tsunami, the earthquake that triggered that was a 9.2 to 9.3. Ultimately, nearly 230,000 people lost their lives.
Yes.
What might we be looking at here, Professor?
Well, hopefully much, much less. The main difference being that at the Indian Ocean, at the time of the Indian Ocean tsunami, there was no warning system, no tsunami warning system available. So essentially the 14 countries that were affected by that that tsunami had no warning of the impending event. What we're seeing now is, you know, an advanced warning system giving hours of time for people across the Pacific to evacuate. And it's very, you know, that's a really, really big change compared to what's there.
I'm going to use the wrong terminology. I know I'm now talking about tornadoes, but how does a tsunami effectively blow itself out? What happens?
Oh, so it's a massive energy that basically forms a big wave or series of waves that goes across the ocean and hits the shorelines. And it takes a long time for it to dissipate that energy. In fact, it carries that energy with it because it has a very long wavelength. So it's very difficult to dissipate with distance. And that's why it's so damaging far away.
Thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. Thanks for all your expertise. I know you'll be watching with a keen eye how it develops. Tiziana Rosetto is Professor of Earthquake Engineering at the Technical University of Delft in the Netherlands. Professor, thank you for your time. Full updates, of course, throughout the day here on LBC as just how devastating this tsunami might be. We'll come back, though, to events here, in a sense, but it's events here of young people leaving, 18 to 30, leaving the country. Almost around half, or so, I'm so sorry, more than half thinking of doing it. Ollie's in Guildford. Does this apply to you, Ollie? Hello.
Yeah, hi, Nick. Morning.
Hello, sir.
I wanted to call in. So I'm in my last year of medical school at the moment. So I'm 22.
Right.
And I'm just looking ahead to... So you probably know we've got the foundation program, but two years of training that everyone gets when you come out of medical school. But the issues that I'm looking ahead to and that I've seen with people older than me who are in the job is that there's nowhere to go, really, in the UK once you've done that.
What do you mean, nowhere to go?
Once you've done everyone does the same sort of general program, the F1 and F2 program, and then you want to apply to specialty training after that.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue that I see, it's been the same for the last few years, is that the specialty training programs are so oversubscribed that people are ending up out of a job or just looking for roundabout, like locum work, rather than actually getting into a set career path as a doctor in the UK.
So I don't know, obviously this is a profession you're far closer to than I am, so... There are many, many doctors out of work or effectively in the wrong job currently, are there?
Yeah, so, I mean, if you take a role like if you want to train to be an emergency medicine doctor, it's the same sort of pathway as if you do anaesthetics or critical care.
I see.
That training role is oversubscribed 3-1, and that's one of the least oversubscribed roles that we have available. That's the same ratio as training as a GP in the UK. So people are getting stuck at this pinch point that isn't really being looked at as much as I feel like it probably should be.
Where would you seek to go?
So I originally am from Australia, actually. I've been here since I was about 8 or 9. So that might be an option for me, but that's what a lot of people are considering as well in similar positions.
When you started your training, did you think, you know what, I don't think I'm going to be able to put my whole career into the UK, or were you hopeful that you could?
I always thought that I would want to commit to the NHS, especially if I'm being trained through the NHS system. Mm. But I suppose it will get to a point, I'm hoping that things can improve in the next 3 years before I get there,
okay,
where I have to choose between advancing my career or leaving. Yeah,
we need folk like you. So you're half Aussie, half Brit, are you?
No, I'm fully Australian. I just lived here for, like, 13
oh,
years.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, OK. I was going to ask you, you're supporting the Ashes, but I suppose we know the answer to that one, isn't it?
Yeah, you know the answer to that one.
The team that's going to lose the next series. Look at how the English... That Ben Stokes is going to give your boys a hell of a beating. Look after yourself, Ollie. I hope you don't leave. And thank you for the training you're doing. And whatever you give us, please think long and hard. We don't need to lose doctors like you. It's 9:45, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Some 1.9 million people in Japan have been placed under tsunami evacuation orders. A cabinet minister's told Nick that Britain is not rewarding Hamas by moving towards recognising a Palestinian state. And the British Medical Association's refused to rule out further strikes after a five-day walkout in England. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, some rain in the east, a high of 24 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. On the M4, a lane is closed eastbound from Junction 5 for Langley to Junction 4B for the M25. That's because of an accident. A lane is blocked on the M25 anti-clockwise on an entry slip road due to a broken down vehicle at Junction 24 for Potter's Bar. Also on the M25, one lane is closed due to a vehicle tyre change clockwise at Junction 2 for the Darrenth interchange. The A4 Cromwell Road in South Kensington is partially blocked westbound due to a broken down car at Knaresborough Place. And on the tube, services suspended on Windrush London Overground line between Dalston Junction and Highbury and Islington. There are severe delays on the Piccadilly line westbound between Cockfosters and Acton Town, and there's no service on the Jubilee line.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
The UK will formally recognise the state of Palestine in September unless Israel commits to a ceasefire. What does this mean?
James O'Brien on LBC.
Pump 6 in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
OK.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Am I on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
A Southern train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
All those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
The road stretches before you, but there's trouble ahead. Stationary cars. You're faced with the McDonald's side mission. Do you A, join the ever-growing queue, or B, take the next exit and treat yourself to a glorious Mackey's?
Detouring to McDonald's.
Start your side mission today.
Summer's all about making memories. And at Win Plus, you can win £7,000 to spend on holidays, festivals, shopping sprees and loads more. Enter now at winplus.co.uk and make the summer unforgettable. Win Plus. Great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Come back to the issue of recognition of Palestine by the United Kingdom government. Let's have one last call on the exodus of young people. Adam is in Golders Green. I'm told you're just out of this age bracket. Is that right? Morning.
Morning. Yeah, just about. I'm 33 now.
Right.
So slightly out of the age bracket. But we were in the same position. My wife and I got married young.
Mm.
By the age of 29, we had four small children.
Wow! Didn't you have a television?
No, actually, we don't. We try not to waste time with other things. The kids keep us busy, so it's great.
I
and young,
I
hope.
Yeah.
So we were 29. We had our fourth. And for us, it was house prices. All we could afford at the time, this is 5 years ago, we were renting a two-up, two-down mid-terrace in a below-average road in an average London borough.
Mm.
And we were paying a fortune for that. And we were desperate to get something bigger, obviously. But rents were crazy and houses were just not happening.
Where did you look? Which countries did you look at?
So we looked at the US for the reason that... So to buy an average four-bed semi for our family in London in an average London borough is close to £1 million these days,
mm.
which we were struggling to get. And we said, if we hit 30, we haven't bought a house, we're going. So at the age of 29, we hadn't bought anything. So I was looking, and in the commuter belt for Manhattan... where I work in the city, I could have got a job in Manhattan doing the equivalent, earning more money. And in the commuter by Manhattan for $1 million, which is obviously much less than £1 million, I could have bought a six-bedroom house with a three-acre garden, a 45-minute commute from Manhattan.
Were you going to Westchester or the island? Where are you going? Or Jersey?
So we were looking at New Jersey or Jersey. Monroe County.
Yeah, I know exactly where you are. Right. But you didn't do it.
So we bought the house. Last minute, at the age of 30, we actually made it, and we managed to scrape enough together and find a house we could buy. And that was, we're talking, 5 years ago, before the cost of living crisis really hit in, before interest rates went through the roof. So we struggled then, and we sort of just scraped by. But how young people do it today with the interest rates as they are, and the cost of living, which it is now, I just don't understand. Even for us, so we have the house, our mortgage has now gone through the roof.
Yeah, of course.
And we're still thinking, maybe we should still move, because my mortgage is ridiculous, the cost of living is crazy.
What was the reaction of your family when, at the last minute, you didn't jump on the plane to the United States?
My parents were very relieved.
I bet they were.
They wanted us to hang around, obviously, to be next to them. But my wife has a lot of family in New York, so her family was so, welcome. And they were a bit gutted that we weren't moving.
Four young children, where do their lives, what's better for their young lives, would you say? Life in the United Kingdom or life in the United States?
It's a tough one. The culture in the United States, my wife and I, we're not a great fan of. We much prefer the culture in England, a bit more European, a bit more...
Yeah, dead right.
Can I say sophisticated? I don't want to get into trouble.
Yeah, of course you can. Of course you can.
But needs are what they are. And if we couldn't afford a house or we couldn't afford to, clothe, feed, house our children, then as parents, you have to do the responsible thing and go.
Look after yourself and your wife and your four children. Good luck, Adam. Thank you for your story. Glad, obviously, that we kept you. We need industrious people like you. Thanks, Adam. So let's finish as we began, which is the UK government official recognition of Palestine. Well, they've got 41 days, Israel. 41 days, some would argue, of more starvation while we wait. And do you honestly think Israel will change its stance? And then if it does, actually, we don't recognise. Is that the position Sakir's in? Paul's in Oswaldwistle. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Yes,
right, great show.
Oh, thank
what
you.
I would like to propose is a coalition of the willing.
Ooh.
And this coalition will be essentially a military coalition that would tell Israel and Hamas, we are going in, we are setting up aid centres, and although we don't want to get into any fights, if we're fired on, there will be a proportional response.
Right. So how would that work in
practical terms?
How would that work in practical terms?
I'm not sure. I'm not a military planner.
Right.
Okay. I hate the idea of military action.
Okay. So the reason I asked that was, what do you imagine the response from Israel would be?
They'd have to accept it in the end. All us we're going in is for feeding the people.
But if you accept that they have not accepted pretty widespread global condemnation to date, why would this alter it, Paul? That's what I'm not managing to tune into.
I At least it would achieve the objective of feeding people, wouldn't it?
Right, but there's sort of the threat of, I guess, military action against Israel. Is that a path down which you want to tread, in all honesty?
Only directly against the forces that fire on us, yes.
All right, okay. I mean, look, credit to you, you're trying to find a solution. My concern is that that's, to use the expression, upping the ante. Paul, have a good day. Thank you. Let's go to Israel. David's in Netanya. David, your reaction to Sir Keir Starmer's stance. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Great programme. So I live in Finchley and I've got a home in Netanya.
Mm.
So I've got both estates. So a couple of things. Firstly, it's not a coherent, credible foreign policy. It was forced on him because he's weak and he's bowed to the pressure from the 130-odd backbenchers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a totally hypocritical and counterproductive decision. Firstly, it's muddled.
Well, I mean, he's not on his own, is he? I mean, France is taking a similar stance, and plenty of other countries are taking a similar position, of course, David.
They are, and I think it's largely driven by, I would say, the media focus on Gaza to the exclusion of everything else. In Sudan, there are 24 million people facing starvation, according to the United Nations. There are 8 million facing severe starvation, but it doesn't reach the news. Nobody cares about that. Nobody cares about the 8 million. So it's a terrible situation in Gaza. But all that's going to happen now is that Hamas will say, well, we don't do anything because Israel's under pressure, Israel's under focus. So it makes peace less likely.
Well, I think it's highly unlikely that any hostage is going to be released now until September, is it? There's no chance for those poor individuals, I would suggest.
They're never going to release all the hostages. That's their only bargaining tool. Hamas will never, ever release all the hostages. You know, we hear all this nonsense on the radio of apartheid in Israel, and it's complete nonsense. We were in a shoe shop in Jerusalem. The manager of the shoe shop was a woman wearing a hijab.
Right, yeah, okay.
Running the place. We went to the National Library, which was recently opened. There's a synagogue and a mosque next door to each other so that the Arab Muslim people working there, people visiting there, could visit the mosque.
I witnessed that when I came to Israel and went around Tel Aviv, particularly Tel Aviv, more so than Jerusalem, that how varied it is. I did see that with my own eyes. David, thank you. I want to finish to give it a minute, really, to Philip in Bognor Regis, your take on the government stance. Philip, all yours. Go ahead.
You've got to get to the nub of the problem to fix a problem, okay? Mm-hmm. That's what 50 years in engineering taught me.
Right.
All right, we're here. He's trying to recognise a state that doesn't exist, but the problem is, that is the problem. There is a state that doesn't exist.
Right.
After the war, the Allies gave away more than 90% of the Palestinian land to Jews. They gave away 25% of the land.
So your engineering experience... So your engineering experience says we need to get back to the root of the problem. What does that look like, Philip? What does that look like?
It looks like proper, fully defined Palestinian state.
Who gives up the land?
They were historically theirs.
Who gives up the land, sir?
Pardon?
Who gives up the land for the two-state solution? God can't make more land. Who gives up the land?
Israel must give back the stolen land that they've taken.
All right. OK. That is your view. Whether that is likely to happen, of course, is another matter. Philip, thank you for your input. Now, don't miss tomorrow's show. I'll be joined by someone who's rarely out of the headlines.
We will aim to cut crime by half in the first 5 years of a reform government. We will take back control of our streets. We will take back control of our courts, of our prisons. And if you're a criminal, I am putting you on notice today.
Well, he might be ahead in the polls, but do his numbers add up when it comes to fighting crime? And is he really on the side of Jimmy Savile? Yes, it's Nigel Farage, leader of Reform UK, in the studio tomorrow morning taking your calls. But that's it for today. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. What a time to be alive it is. The time is approaching 10 o'clock and front pages are united today in reporting Keir Starmer's decision to threaten, if that's the right word, to recognise the state of Palestine unless Israel stops its current conduct in Gaza. And I use the word reporting because the responses are very different in both tone and content. There are claims that it represents a reward for Hamas. There are predictable criticisms coming in from Israel. And there are corners of the UK media that see this as a cause for optimism, if not celebration. I'm interested in why you think he's done it and what it might actually mean.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, multiple countries are braced for tsunami waves after a massive earthquake off the east coast of Russia. Evacuation warnings are in place across the Pacific region after the 8.8 magnitude tremor struck early this morning. They cover parts of the US, Japan and countries including the Philippines. Meteorologist Jim Dale says it could take some time to develop.
Because the Pacific is so big, we've got to be looking at the United States, obviously Japan very close, Russia itself, eastern Russia, and there'll be other places. So, as I say, this is unfolding. We'll see how it goes. These things just happen. They're instantaneous. Very little warning.
You can follow live developments on the LBC app. Ministers have rejected claims by Israel that Britain is rewarding Hamas by moving towards recognising a Palestinian state. Sir Starmer has promised the UK will do that by September, unless Israel agrees to end the crisis in Gaza. He's also reiterated his call for Hamas to disarm and release remaining hostages. The Shadow Foreign Secretary, Dame Priti Patel, has told LBC that Sir is just trying to appease his backbenchers.
This situation is taking place because of Hamas and October the 7th. Hamas is a terrorist organisation that basically is running amok in Gaza, that is inflicting pain on the people of Gaza. And what's Britain's response? Britain's response basically is to say, let's recognise Palestine rather than enter a formal peace process.
Police say a 14-year-old boy remains in a critical condition after a stabbing in East London. Five boys have been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder over the attack in East Ham on Saturday. Jeffrey Epstein's brother has branded President Trump a liar for playing down his relationship with the late paedophile financier. Mr. Trump is under growing pressure over reports his name appears in files related to Epstein, documents he'd previously promised to release. The White House says that's fake news. Mark Epstein, who's been speaking to our sister station, LBC News, says it's the mark of a desperate person.
I understand a lot of people distancing himself from Jeffrey. He was charged, you know, with crimes that people don't want to be associated with. And I understand that, you know, but the lies, you know, that's a little bit much, especially when they're so provable that they're lies. It's becomes laughable.
Bayern Munich have signed Luis Diaz from Liverpool in a deal worth £65.5 million. The Colombia international was given permission to leave the Premier League champions' pre-season tour of Asia on Monday. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 20 points at 91.15. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.50. LBC weather, most places dry with sunny spells. Eastern parts of England and Scotland could see some showers later. A high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's always, what's the word we want? Educative, isn't it? To listen to Priti Patel, Dame Priti Patel, opining on matters Middle Eastern without reminding us of the time she was fired or forced to resign as Secretary of State for International Development after misleading the public about undisclosed meetings with Israeli officials in secrecy. And it is to domestic politics, as opposed to international, that I want to turn your attention first this morning, or at least looking at matters international through the lens of domestic politics. Keir Starmer has made a move that will, I don't know, it's hard to tell, isn't it, satisfy few I think, because most people will think that he has either gone too far or not gone far enough. That is the curse, isn't it, in a sense, of the centrist. He's gone too far. No, he hasn't. He hasn't gone far enough. Do you know, that happens to me sometimes. I sit down as we prepare to tackle a particularly tricky subject together, and something occurs to me in the opening moments of my, what was it called the other day? Big pile of waffle. That hadn't occurred to me before. I mean, how do you find the people that think Keir Starmer's getting it about right? Well, I will find you today. You can call me on 03456060973. But I think you can probably divide early reaction into he has gone too far or he has not gone enough. If you're not across the story, the details are as follows. The UK will formally recognise the state of Palestine. Problem one, nobody is entirely clear about precisely what that means. That, of course, may not be the point. Formally recognise the state of Palestine in September as a result of the, to quote the UK government, increasingly intolerable situation on the ground in Gaza. In order to prevent the recognition of the state of Palestine, Israel must abide by a ceasefire and commit to a two-state solution in the Middle East. Already, four, five, six questions are presenting themselves, not least whether or not the leverage that Starmer seeks to exert has any prospect whatsoever of succeeding. He recalled his cabinet from their summer break to approve this plan after meeting with Donald Trump up in Scotland. And the cabinet has agreed on this proposal, with the UK now set to follow France in acknowledging statehood. I mean, one obvious question as well is how on earth would... what possible prospect is there of this actually succeeding, of Benjamin Netanyahu waking up this morning and going, do you know what, old Starmer's got a point, actually. Let's call a ceasefire, return to our commitment to the two-state solution, and hopefully avoid the UK government's mooted recognition of the state of Palestine. But I want you to tell me why you think he's done it. 03456060973 is the number that you need. Words are horribly inadequate in the context of this conversation. I don't know what words would fit, but I know the words I have don't. You've got the word proportionate, and of course it's corollary, disproportionate. You've got the word sustainable, and it's corollary, unsustainable. And there are people in the United Kingdom who divide pretty neatly along both of those lines, that Israel's actions in Gaza became disproportionate a long time ago, and people persuaded that Israel's actions in Gaza remain proportionate, similarly with sustainability. And Keir Starmer's job is to govern the United Kingdom. He has, I think, like all the best world leaders, a proper interest in international relations, but his job is to govern the United Kingdom, and sometimes to use his position governing the United Kingdom to pursue the greater good. Already, you could be forgiven for thinking that what he's done here has more to do with internal party politics or internal domestic UK politics than it does with anything that's going on in the ground in the Middle East, and you may well be right, which is why the question I'm asking is, why do you think he has done it, and what does it actually mean? What does it actually mean, either objectively or intellectually, or perhaps even more interestingly today, what does it mean to you? What does it mean to you that the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom is, well, I mean, is it threatening? Because threatening's another weird word in this kind of context, isn't it? Threatening to recognise the Palestinian state, as if that is something with which you punish Israel. In fact, I'm not sure you can challenge that analysis. The recognition of the Palestinian state in this context, despite it being a goal of previous Israeli administrations, a cherished goal of some previous Israeli prime ministers, the world has turned to such a degree that Keir Starmer now cites the recognition of a Palestinian state as a punishment for the current government of Israel. I don't know quite how that plays into broader